are live. It's Friday, April 19th.
The 248-page patent for the Moderna technology that was administered to people in the COVID shots was filed in 2020. The patent lists several embodiments or variations of this technology. And while we don't know who got what embodiment, we know that several different batch numbers were deployed, and some were far more deadlier than others. According to the Moderna patent, this technology contains self-assembled nanoparticles, and in certain variations, these nanoparticles can be used for the controlled release of compounds once they are in the human body. These lipid nanoparticles are encapsulated into a polymer hydrogel, a controlled release coating that includes polyvinyls. This has been verified by Anna Mielchia and Clifford Carnicom's research. In a 2013 TEDMed talk, Dr. Ido Bachelet says that these nanorobots have already been successfully developed in Israel and that they can be injected into the human body with a basic syringe. He shows an image of what they look like, and they appear to be the same structures that the Fifth Column found in their research and claimed was powered by 5G, which was confirmed by Dr. Bachelet.
My team developed nanorobots that carry antennas. These antennas are made from metal nanoparticles. Now, the antenna enabled the nanobots to respond to externally applied electromagnetic fields. So these versions of nanobots can actually be activated with the press of a button on a joystick.
In the following video, it is being discussed by developers in 2015.
The nanorobot we designed and fabricated is a machine that can be programmed to autonomously recognize target cells and deliver payloads to those cells.
The basic idea is to make a cage or a basket that protects a fragile or toxic or precious payload and only releases it when it's at the right moment.
The nanorobot that we designed actually looks like an open-ended barrel or a clamshell that has two halves. So the two halves of this open-ended barrel or a clamshell are linked together by flexible DNA hinges, and the entire structure is held shut by latches or locks that are actually DNA double helices. The way it works is that in the absence of the key, which is a molecular protein, the duplexes are held sufficiently strong to maintain the entire structure closed. But when the key is present, that piece of DNA that we designed to recognize that key switches to bind to the key, and the duplex zips open.
The work of Todd Callender's team at VaxChoice.com have concluded that these shots contain a variety of synthetic pathogens that can be released with external 5G frequencies. The Moderna patent describes these nanoparticle mimics, which mimic the delivery of a variety of pathogens, and lists over 100 of them within the patent. And according to the work at VaxChoice, these synthetic pathogens each have an IP address. They are cataloged by the Department of Energy, and they use cesium-137, which we have been contaminated with from the environment, as a building block for their construction within our bodies using external frequency. And their research shows that the Microsoft patent filed in 2020, 060606, cryptocurrency system using body activity data, is now in effect, and that this technology is turning the human body into an antenna which can output energy, meaning that humans are being turned into batteries to fuel the digital AI prison that is being built around us. And if you choose not to comply, the technology includes a built-in kill switch. Thanks to many independent researchers and scientists, we are figuring out their agenda, but they continue to walk freely among us, unrestrained by any justice whatsoever. Reporting for InfoWars, this is Greg Reese.
This is such an incredibly important report. It's all documented. Nanobots that release toxins and harvest energy from the body. I'm going to have it reposted on my X account. We're going to upload it there right now. I'm going to be talking about this today and a lot more. Stay with us. It's Friday, April 19th, 2024. I'm your host, Alex Jones. We're going to be live here for the next 4 hours, as we are weekdays, 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. Central, ahead of Owen Schroyer in the War Room right here on the InfoWars radio/TV/internet transmission network. We are 199 days, 12 hours, 53 minutes, 21 seconds the most important election in world history. All right, we've got a very, very full plate here to hit today. We have a special guest we'll tell you about a little bit later in studio in the third hour. But let me just tell you what's coming up today. I was sitting here this morning getting ready for the broadcast in the last few hours thinking all this news is so incredibly important and interesting and informative, and it all ties together about this incredible experience we're having on this amazing planet, hurtling through space, orbiting this amazing sun in the middle of God's universe. But when I was watching again yesterday and today, Greg Reese's report, we'll put on screen for you, a video report I'm about to post on Real Alex Jones on X. You have to understand that it's all documented. That little five-minute report is decades of research and admissions that we're being colonized by self-replicating nanobots inside of our body that are manipulated by 5G and other frequencies, and that this is a fact in the mainline medical literature. So we'll pull up that headline for TV viewers and radio listeners so I can read it to you again. We just played the report in the first 5 minutes of the broadcast, but some stations don't carry that. Some radio stations and TV stations don't carry the first five. Nanobots that release toxins and harvest energy from the body. That's the headline, but the headline's not even hardcore enough. So I'm coming up with a hardcore headline here in the next 15 minutes or so, and I'm going to post it, re-upload it to Real Alex Jones, because I want to spend some time on this. But you have to understand, this entire global project with nanotech and computers and forced injections, and the federal government saying last week they're going to inject children without parental consent with whatever they want. That's one of the big headlines we've got here. And the central bank digital currencies and the world government, all of it is part of a larger admitted scientific plan. And the mad scientists, the military industrial complex controlled by the technological elite that Eisenhower spoke about and warned about, have a plan for us. And they roll it out in increments, and they roll it out through different attack vectors. But in the final equation, ladies and gentlemen, it is a post-human rollout. So we just posted the video to the front page of X. I'm going to have it made the top video, even above the live show feed, on Real Alex Jones. And I just reposted it under the headline, "The Post-Human Experiment is Live." Must-watch emergency report. And this has already been deployed, and it's literally been confirmed by hundreds of mainline medical institutions. That we have all the Bill Gates and MIT patents. The communist Chinese have their patents. This is really happening. And the people in the management level of this that are aware of what's going on, they believe they're getting ready to transcend their humanity and transcend their bodies and are forcing an accelerated evolution. So this big discussion we're having right now is really the only discussion. They're trying to play God. They're taking over God's plan. It's going to cause mass illness and disease and pain and death, and has already caused that in the process. But they believe out of that primordial chaos will emerge the Superman, or as Nietzsche called it, and then Hitler followed it, the Ubermensch. The Uberman, the Uber boss. So that's what we're facing. That's what we're dealing with. And I saw this about 6 months ago, but I wanted to air it again. And later in the broadcast, I'm going to air her whole 11-minute presentation. She's a very impressive lady, and I've got her bio. We'll get to it in a moment. But at a Better Way conference in 2023, one of the presenters was Laura Aboli from AI and Transhumanism to Being Human. And then later I'm going to air the whole report. Before I had all this other huge news, Israel striking Iran, day five of the Trump show trial, criminal trial in New York, and more videos of the head of NPR, who's also involved with Wikipedia, admitting they control reality. They're lying to us for our own good. They're censoring everybody. The FBI warning of imminent massive cyber attacks right through the election, all the hyping of civil war. J.P. Morgan selling 80 million customer transaction histories, total violation at so many levels. World Health Organization official admits vaccine passports were a scam. They're attacking the front runner to be Canada's new leader. Pierre Poilievre, or however you say his name, for talking about central bank digital currencies and then showing clips of me talking about it. It'd be like if he talked about a hurricane and I talked about it. They go, look, he's talking about the same hurricane. Or if I talked about an NFL game coming up, and so did he. Oh, look, he's controlled by Alex Jones. He's talking about some imaginary central bank digital currency or global ID or social credit score, ESG. These are all real things that aren't in the planning phase, that are now in the deployment phase, but they don't want us to discuss it. So I'm going to play a clip of this really informed lady who boils it down so nicely, Laura Aboli, and then we'll be back after that with more.
The final goal is to eradicate humanity as we know it. Once you understand the final destination, it becomes much easier to look back and identify the psychological conditioning, the biological tampering, the cultural grooming, and the educational prepping that we have been subjected to for decades in preparation to making us accept a post-human future. It takes a lot of physical and psychological abuse to get an intelligent species like ours to agree to its own extinction. Most, if not all, that has transcended in the last 60 years was designed to get us closer to accepting such a dystopian reality. Whether you care to accept it or not, we live in a hyper-controlled matrix where our perception of reality is meticulously planned, managed, and executed in order to control and steer us in whichever direction they wish. And the direction is a post-human world. For this, they first needed to destabilize, dehumanize, and demoralize humanity through every means possible. The destruction of the nuclear family, children being indoctrinated by the state, abortion, the eradication of God and spirituality from education, life in mega cities and away from nature, toxic food, air and water, social media, replacing real human connection and interaction, engineered financial crisis and taxation, endless wars and massive migration, stress, anxiety, depression, drugs and alcohol, constant fear-mongering, moral relativism as the new religion. And I could go on and on about how humanity has been influenced and forced to move away from all the things that give us strength, security, purpose, and meaning. A weak, immoral, disconnected, ignorant, and unhealthy population is an easy target for the next stage, the creation of an entire generation of androgynous beings. Masculinity is under attack psychologically, culturally, and biologically. Women are being replaced in sports, entertainment, and politics by men pretending to be women. And children are being indoctrinated at school to think that gender is a choice. The transgender movement is not a grassroots movement. It comes from the top. It has nothing to do with people's freedom of expression, sexuality, or civil rights. It's an evil psyop with a clear agenda to get us closer to transhumanism by making us question the most fundamental notion of human identity, our gender. If you don't know who you are, if you already identify as a hybrid between a man and a woman, you will be easily convinced to become a hybrid between human and machine. Gender ideology is the 2 + 2 = 5 from George Orwell's 1984 dystopian novel. It's the final test to see whether we will follow the most absurd party line towards our own extinction. But 2 + 2 = 4. And no matter how you choose to dress, call yourself, or change your physique, will not change that. The sad reality, though, is that in the gaslighting process to get us closer to a post-human future, they have mentally and physically harmed an increasing number of children and young people. And it's only getting worse. This must be stopped.
All right, Laura Aboli is a very successful investor and designer and researcher, and that is from her speech that we're going to play a lot more of today. Last year, transhumanism, the endgame. So this is a set plan, and it's being rolled out against humanity, and already millions of people have been colonized by the nanotech that is self-replicating in the bodies. And when you die, it separates out and forms giant clots. It forms many clots while you're alive as well. But it's all part of the larger test. We all think of being microchipped by a government as them putting the grain of rice size microchips from the 70s in you. No, it's put into you in a self-replicating liquid. That's why you take the Pfizer, Moderna shots and just put them in a Petri dish, and they grow the designs of microchips because it's growing inside of your body. And the public has to come to grips with the fact of the full horror of this. It's so terrible. It's so over the top. You automatically say this can't be happening, but it is. And in Greg Reese's 4.5-minute short clip that I keep mentioning that I posted at Real Alex Jones minutes ago that I hope you'll go share like your life depends on it, because it does. He shows dozens of patents and documents and government-funded institutions in the U.S. and Israel and other places admitting they're doing this. And that's what they put in us, and that's what they've done, because we're so trusting and because we think we're living in 1950. The post-human experiment is live. Must-watch emergency report. Go to Real Alex Jones and repost it on your X accounts everywhere else. Download it and share it, because it's the best short little boil down there is out there. I want to put a longer report together that integrates with my speeches and hers and research, and then globalists and top scientists admitting that this isn't something that they've started doing. They've been creating for 2 decades in animals, like apes and monkeys and cows and pigs and goats and sheep and rats and mice and other rodents, literally colonizing the bodies with these systems. And that's using nanotech and synthetic life with genetic engineering. In the 70s, there's the famous photo of the mouse with a human ear growing on its back. That's in the 70s. That's 50 years ago. That was being done by the time I was born and was released to the media by the late 70s. 50 years. We're not in Kansas anymore, ladies and gentlemen. So that's very important. And I'm going to be getting into that more later in the second hour. But now let's move into all the other news. I mentioned this some. On Monday, it broke huge. On Tuesday and Wednesday, Elon Musk reposted it. Probably got just different versions of her saying similar anti-free speech things, 300 million views. This is really a big topic, and that's good news. So thank God for Elon Musk on that front. But here's the headline. This keeps getting crazier. The head of NPR hates the Constitution of the USA. And of course, we're talking about Catherine Mayer, the head of NPR. And she says the number one threat, and we'll play the clip in a moment, the number one threat to fighting disinformation is that you have you have a reality that's not based on truth, but is based on whatever she and others say it is at the Atlantic Council, which is one of the top governing boards over the intelligence agencies and is a revolving door between the intelligence agencies and private megacorporations who then deploy these operations against humanity. And if you wonder why almost all of the leaders of these globalist groups are women, that's because in our epigenetics, we don't see a woman as bad a threat as a man when you're being surveilled, when you're being censored, when you're being disappeared, when you're being persecuted, when you're being debanked. And that ties into every Hollywood movie or every major video game that comes out. This has been public for more than a decade. They denied it at first. Is given a funding memo that your script has to comport into that agenda. And men are bad. White men are the worst. Women are the bosses. Pregnant women are bad. Families are bad. and math is racist. Two men can have a baby. It's meant to not empower women or, quote, minorities who are the majority worldwide. It is meant to have them ideologically like a religion, and it's not like a religion, it is a religion, their identities, believing that they're about to get a leg up in the world by joining this political, cultural, religious, spiritualist, transhumanist agenda. And she's in other videos that we have talking about how there is no truth but their truth. So they have a truth you must follow that's totally evil and out of control and goes against nature and common sense. And then common sense and God's system and nature itself is under siege and is outlawed in the final equation. So there's a lot of videos of her talking about it. Here's a headline. NPR CEO Catherine Mayer reveals how she ruined Wikipedia. And she goes on to say there is no hard truth, so we can do whatever we want. These are in speeches and Twitter postings. We can do whatever we want. And because we are the moral authority, you have to follow it. But there is no morals when you say you have them. So you're an animal we program, but we're gods. And we tell you what to think and do. And when we say something's moral, it is. When you say something is your moral compass, it doesn't exist. Here's a quote by her on X. She says that she abandoned the free and open internet as a mission of Wikipedia. This is a quote. Because those principles replicated a white male Western construct and did not end up living into the intentionality of what openness can be. Wow, you talk about cult brainwashing, what openness can be. So what do they call the white male world? Well, it's the better parts of Western civilization, science, technology, innovation, a social safety net, a very strong egalitarian classical liberal worldview to treat people well and to have checks and balances. And so the whole world saw that system that was far from perfect, the best house in a bad neighborhood, and the whole world copied it for 150 years or so. And we saw great innovation and great empowerment and great freedom. And everybody wanted to come to the United States and a few other places that had these basic freedoms because you didn't have any of those freedoms anywhere else. Everything was class. You were frozen where you were. Women didn't have rights. But because the West pushed a classical liberal program, they had to attack it. The globalists that want to get rid of that because it empowers the population with a false liberalism. You look at what a liberal is today. They're pro-war. They're pro-censorship. They're pro-torture. They're pro-pedophilia. They are pro-mutilation of children. They farm homeless people and criminals and incentivize people not to work so they can break down society. They destroy everything they get their hands on. But they never admit it's official, even though it is official. It's always Hollywood accused of pushing pedophilia, Hollywood accused of pushing anti-family values, Hollywood accused. And anyone that sits back and looks at this and say, they didn't put women into the workforce because they cared about women. They wanted everybody working, be able to socially engineer them so the state could raise the children. And by every metric, women are not happy today. There's always been women in power positions and women that wanted to go out and do those things, but biologically, it's not generally what women want. And they'll tell you they want a family, they want children, they want a man that goes out and does the lion's share of providing. It's seen as a sign of success if that's how they do it. But now, 70% of the college grads are women. Almost all the new corporate executives are women. And we're told because they are inherently better than men when they're just the other part of the human species. The truth is we're the species divided into two groups, but operating as one species. And any attack on a woman or any attack on a man or an attack on children or an attack on a black person or a white person or anybody is an attack on the species itself. So they're establishing this broken Cloward and Piven strategy that breaks society by design to be able to bring in these total controls. So I want to go to break and come back and play a couple of clips of her talking about how truth is subjective. But again, what she means is you're an animal, you're programmable, you don't have free will. The left always says dogs don't feel love. Well, of course they do. Oh, and you know, when you think your dog's happy wagging its tail, you're just projecting that on. No. They don't want you to know you have free will and that you have a soul and that you can govern your destiny and that you can make decisions. They want you to think you are less than an animal. So that you give control of your psyche and your mind and your destiny to them so they can turn you into a soulless robot automaton like we saw in that classic silent film from Fritz Lang, Metropolis. And they know the power of humans to develop and build whatever we can envision given enough time, and there's an acceleration of that. So they're programming into the consciousness a dystopia so that we will accept that. And after I've talked about her and a lot of other news, my job is not really focusing on Hollywood. I don't watch very much Hollywood garbage, but I did, flying back on an airplane from vacation, watch Barbie, which people said, oh, shows both sides. No, it doesn't. Pure poison. And then I watched Civil War last night. And people are like, oh, it's not political. You don't even know who the bad guys and good guys are. It was horribly anti-American, horribly snuff filmish, globalist fever dream. I knew within 30 seconds of the movie starting, I leaned over to my wife and said, and whispered to her ear, this is what the movie's going to be about. And in the end, it was exactly what I said. We'll be right back. Stay with us. So Wikipedia and NPR have always been leftist deception centers, but now it's cartoonish in how bad it is. And the CEO of NPR, that's also heavily involved on the board with Wikipedia, has come out and said the problem is the First Amendment. And yeah, we basically tell you whatever reality we want you to believe for your own good, because we're the self-appointed righteous ones funded by BlackRock and the private shareholders of the Federal Reserve. So here she is saying the number one challenge in her fight against disinformation, when they're the biggest liars out there, is the First Amendment of the United States. Here she is.
The number one challenge here that we see, and is, of course, the First Amendment in the United States, is a fairly robust protection of rights. And that is a protection of rights both for platforms, which I actually think is very important that platforms have those rights to be able to regulate what kind of content they want on their sites. But it also means that it is a little bit tricky to really address some of the real challenges of where does bad information come from and sort of the influence peddlers who have made a real market economy around it.
The First Amendment in the United States is the big obstacle. Now, here she is saying she believes the truth is subjective and the pursuit of truth can get in the way of getting things done. Before we play that, though, she said we've got to protect people's rights. So we've got to be able to take everybody else's rights away. Oh, you want the taxpayer to pay for a penis and a vagina? Canada just approved that. Oh, we have the right to brainwash your 7-year-old and put them on puberty blockers and fast track them to have their genitals removed because your child has a right for us to brainwash them and take them away from you. These are monsters who've already taken us trillions of miles into hell. And they're following a scientific transhumanist model to so confuse us and so demoralize us and so scramble our brains, we don't know which end is up or down. Here she is declaring war on logic.
The hard things, the places where we are prone to disagreement, say politics and religion. Well, as it turns out, not only does Wikipedia's model work there, it actually works really well. Because in our normal lives, these contentious conversations tend to erupt over disagreement about what the truth actually is. But the people who write these articles, they're not focused on the truth. They're focused on something else, which is the best of what we can know right now. And after 7 years of working with these brilliant folks, I've come to believe that they are onto something, that perhaps for our most tricky disagreements, seeking the truth and seeking to convince others of the truth might not be the right place to start. In fact, our reverence for the truth might be a distraction that's getting in the way of finding common ground and getting things done. Now, that is not to say that the truth doesn't exist, nor is it to say that the truth isn't important. Clearly, the search for the truth has led us to do great things, to learn great things. But I think if I were to really ask you to think about this, one of the things that we could all acknowledge is that part of the reason we have such glorious chronicles to the human experience and all forms of culture is because we acknowledge there are many different truths. And so in the spirit of that, I'm certain that the truth exists for you and probably for the person sitting next to you. But this may not be the same truth. This is because the truth of the matter is very often, for many people, what happens when we merge facts about the world with our beliefs about the world. So we all have different truths. They're based on things like where we come from, how we were raised, and how other people perceive us.
No, there are truths like water boils at a certain temperature, water freezes at a certain temperature. But there are certain truths that if you chop somebody's head off with a machete, that they're going to die. Or that if you chop a little boy's penis off because you convince him that he's a woman, he still has male chromosomes. He just doesn't have part of his body. So she's telling him, you can still have your truth, but we're going to go out and create for the general public the deception. And that's what Wikipedia is. And that's why Google is so obsessed with it. A lot of you probably say, we don't go to Wikipedia. We've known for decades. It's crap. But they're using Wikipedia for Google's AI as its programming script. It's distorted reality that then NPR and CNN and all the rest of them go to so they can read off the same sheet of music in their little symphony of deception. So they can read off and sing off of one hymnal in the church of lies that they call the Ministry of Truth. In 1984, George Orwell, who was Eric Blair, came from a very elite family that had then lost its money. He'd been in the imperial police in India and around the world. He became a communist. He then became one of the top Fabian socialists. He was the head of propaganda for the OSS, placed inside the BBC. And he discovered that it was a cult of power at the top that wanted to destroy reason and destroy logic so they could rule over everyone. And he wrote a bunch of essays that I've read that have been published in several books and different variants of it. And I found the non-fiction writing of George Orwell to be even more compelling than the writings he did in 1984 and obviously his other amazing book, Animal Farm, that was written for the general public to understand it. But he was a moral communist. He went and fought and got shot in the neck by the Nazis in the Spanish Civil War. He believed in it. Then he saw the corruption of the Russians, and then he saw the corruption of the Fabian Socialists. And he was at the highest levels on the board of the Fabian Socialists, that is the most powerful globalist group in the world at that time and still to a great extent today. Their symbol is a wolf in sheep's clothing. You can type in the official symbol logo of the Fabian Socialists. It's a wolf putting on a sheep's skin. And he explained in 1984 in fiction, but also in his essays in nonfiction, one compendium I read was To Kill an Elephant. To Kill an Elephant was just one name of one essay, but that was the name of the larger, huge, thick book I read when I was about 18. I'm sure you can find it republished out there. But the point is, he explained that he wanted to know the world. So he was down and out in Paris. He became homeless on purpose in England, got locked up for a long period of time in a poorhouse where they had forced labor still. He was at the heights of the British government. He was at the lows. He really was a man in the streets. Contracted tuberculosis that later killed him in 1949 from doing it. But Eric Blair explained this, that O'Brien torturing Winston in 1984 is the archetype of the Fabian socialist. And O'Brien is torturing him and says, listen, Winston, we know you were following the party. We know you weren't going to resist us. We just want to torture a beautiful soul that could still see beauty and see goodness and totally wreck your mind until when I show you five fingers or four fingers, you don't see any fingers. You only see a blur and what I tell you, because there is no truth except I'm going to trample you and I'm going to be trampled and tortured and destroyed as well very soon, Winston, because we serve dark forces that want to destroy humanity and stomp on a human face forever. A black boot stomping on the human face forever against God, Winston. We are satanic. We worship a dark force, and you look at the wrinkles on my face and the black circles around my eyes, and you look at how exhausted I am and how I work 20 hours a day torturing good people to death. He said, you don't understand. I enjoy it, and I love serving evil. And when we're done with you, skip the break, please. When we're done with you, we're going to put you out to pasture in the Chestnut Cafe. You're going to drink crappy synthetic gin. You're going to watch television and all the brainwashing and lies. And you're going to believe it instead of being one of the chief propagandists writing it. And Winston Smith is the archetype of George Orwell at the Ministry of Truth, which is the Ministry of Lies. And he said, when we're done, you won't know what day it is. You'll be let out of your house. And when you're on your way to the Chestnut Cafe, we will shoot you in the back of the head. You'll be given no dignity. And then we're going to put you in a furnace, Winston. And we're going to shoot your ashes and gases into the atmosphere. And we're going to erase you from every piece of history. And you will never exist, because this is about our cult of power, the priest of power, being God and suspending gravity and suspending the family. And when we're done, the IQs will drop and people won't be able to talk, and we're going to kill everyone, kill every human on earth. Okay. And you read that and you go, wow, this is the guy on the board of the Fabian Socialists. I think their board had like 20 members. The brain trust running the British Empire. The chief propagandist for OSS in World War II. So if you want to know who you're up against, that's who you're up against. And then before he died in 62, going from memory, look at when Aldous Huxley died. He gave a speech at Berkeley. I've talked a lot about it. It's in my clips of it or in my film, Endgame. And in Endgame, Blueprint for Global Enslavement, we have the quotes and the clips of them saying it. And Aldous Huxley, whose brother ran the UN and created UNESCO, the real head of the UN, Julian Huxley, who wrote Brave New World in 1931, published it in 1932, and he gave a speech. He said, you know, I know George Orwell knew him, but his model of the jackboots and the telescreens and the surveillance, that's only for the small percentage that resist us. Everyone else is going to go with this willingly, because we're going to brainwash them from birth. We're going to inject them with poisons. We're going to dumb them down. We're going to destroy the human community. We're going to confuse everything until a very small group of humanoid three-foot goblin creatures are left. So we, the elite, who will be living thousands of years with life extension, can laugh at the goblins, or like the minions, and remember how we conquered humanity. But first, we're going to teach you to love your servitude, and we're going to slowly tear you and your families apart. So why don't you go read Brave New World Revisited, that he was giving a speech on, that is a nonfiction book. And you read that book, published in 1961, he's on a book tour for it, and it's everything they've basically done now. But they're behind, and there's a bigger resistance than they thought. They're not all powerful. But if you will not admit they exist, and if you will not admit they're doing this to you, and if you will not understand the attack you're under, you will adapt and overcome in a subversion paradigm by submitting to it via Stockholm Syndrome. And when the masses follow the same program, I coined the term Mass Stockholm Syndrome. Mass Stockholm Syndrome. Learned helplessness, the normalcy bias. These are all key things to understand. But when you listen to the lady we just played, the head of NPR, involved in the project to create the AI script with Wikipedia, the AI hymnal, the AI Bible, it's little false reality where they program it, they change it, they edit it, they change reality as they go. Just like Winston Smith would go back and edit old newspaper articles and republish them. That's what it is. It's the ministry of truth for real. You've got the ministry of love that tortures and murders and kills people. It's all there. And why would we turn our lives over to these people? Because through stimuli, negative and positive, through Pavlovian punishment and reward, through operant conditioning, they will give us a carrot for submitting, but that only puts us deeper into the cage, and then we pay for it times a thousand. Or they give us a little shock, a little nudge, a little punishment. Oh, we might be called a name. Oh, we might lose a job, maybe a bank account. It'll get a lot worse once they're full control grid, once the straitjacket and chains are in place. Now, our only hope, and it's more than a hope, it's a guarantee of destiny, is to reject them and to take the pain now. And you'll learn that the pain, not in a masochistic way, but in a way of transfiguring or transcending, that the more pain you go through fighting these people, you will see incredible results. You will see incredible victories. You will see wholesome things happen. You will be invigorated at a cellular, biological, spiritual, electrochemical level. And then if you'll only challenge the New World Order with me and join me, you will become completely taken over, but not through deception, but through free will, like a woman loves a man or a man loves a woman and they love their children. You will be in a family. And then no threats will do anything to you anymore except direct you to where the enemy is afraid, what they are scared of, what they don't want you to look into, and you will take the pain as the navigational line to where you need to go. And I've used this analogy many times. I'll use it again. B-17 pilots, like my father's father, in World War II in North Africa and then into Italy and into Germany, volunteering for more than his 22 missions, watching his buddies' B-17s get blown up over Germany. They didn't have radar. It was just coming out. They didn't have it out there in the field. They didn't have good lines on how to get to the spot for the factories and the troops to bomb them ahead of the landing forces that were coming years later in the Army Air Corps. But the Germans didn't lie when it came to where they put the anti-aircraft guns. They put them around the factories and around the key bases, and so they knew to steer into the flak clouds of exploding shrapnel and into the B-17s and the Liberators and the Lancasters on fire exploding. But they knew they were delivering their message as well, as their buddies went down around them, and some missions losing half the aircraft in the first year. Many missions half the aircraft, some more. They steered into the flak clouds and into the intensity and looked through their scopes with the matching map of the target they were supposed to hit and dropped their bombs. And that's what we got to do. If you were at a camp out, there's a big raging fire, and your three-year-old's running around with other kids having fun around the campfire in the woods, and then for some reason a kid goes crazy and forgets what they're doing and falls, and I've seen this happen one time, into the fire. Doesn't matter if it's your neighbor's kid or your child, but your child, you see your three-year-old stumble and fall into a good-sized campfire. If you don't instinctively reach into that fire and pull them out and pull them back and put them out, they're going to die. If they're in there 30 seconds to a minute, they're dead. But if you instantly don't think and go with instinct that God already programmed, that is your thinking, that is the program. If you see them falling, you might catch them before they enter the flame. You may pull them out and all they get is their hair burned. They want you to not think from your instincts God gave you, not think from your innate programming. They want you to learn to turn that off so when the time comes, you don't reach into the fire. But what if in a fictitious experiment, your enemies had your three-year-old and they said, if you don't get in that fire, we're going to burn your three-year-old up. And you knew they were going to do it. You'd throw yourself in that fire because you're designed to do that. Maybe you wouldn't. And when people have that attitude, we lose everything. Because we're willing to give it all up, we gain everything. Because we'll lay down our lives for our brothers and sisters, we're given everything. And the enemy knows that, so they create this false, oh, give the homeless free houses, take everybody's money in California so they can kick out the walls and crap on the floors and the liberal social workers can sell them fentanyl and skim the money. No, no, no. Tough love. You can't let them manipulate your instinct to sacrifice yourself for others. You think it through. You understand already what needs to be done. Because these decisions aren't like a snap decision to grab your child out of a fire. That's a default. Or if your child walks out the street and you see a truck coming, you run out to push him out of the way, even though you might get hit. It's not a thought. You do it. In fact, I sent a video a month ago to the crew. And I forgot to play it. Maybe they can find it. It was 3 weeks ago or so. And it was a bear. A brown bear. A grizzly bear, looks like a female, climbing over a woman's fence to steal food out of the trash can. It attacks her dogs, and the woman attacks the bear and runs it back over and throws it, when it's coming over the fence, throws it off the fence. Not a big woman. You know, police have seen this. It's been documented where a woman gets out of a car, it's turned over, and her two-year-old's pinned under it, and the police can't pick it up. And an average woman gets under there and picks the car up off the child because it's commitment and because the brain has a governor so you don't break your back, where they've hypnotized Olympic athletes and things and they can live twice as much when they're hypnotized than before they're hypnotized. Well, that woman gets hypnotized because the bear is coming over her fence and so she throws it off. And it's not like picking up a car, but the point is, she goes into action mode. She's not thinking. She shoves the bear over the fence, grabs her dog, and runs away. Protect my baby. That she sees the dog is at a genetic level. She doesn't want to have a fight with the bear. As soon as she saved the dog, she runs. She fights when she has to. If it's smarter to run, you run. But we don't have anywhere to run with the New World Order. They're coming down on us. They're evil. They're using psychology. And they count on us not understanding that and realizing the only way out of this is pain. There's going to be suffering. Nothing is gained without suffering. But there's going to be a lot more suffering if we keep submitting to this evil. And we're going to lose our consciousness and our souls in the process. So there is no choice, if you understand what I'm saying, than to fully commit yourself against this evil. And you can't do it without the transmission, without the spirit, without the broadcast, without the receiving of the operational manual. And that only happens by saying, God, you're knocking on the door. I'm opening the door. And maybe God came knocking before and you didn't open the door. So God, it doesn't knock after that very much. I come back every 10 years. Now you got to go knock. Hey, you came by a few times. I didn't open the door. I'm at your door now. I'm asking you to tell me what to do. And God will do it. And you'll open up a universe you never knew existed. And God's waiting for you on the other side. All right, I kind of preached this hour. I'm going to, like a laser beam, review Civil War, review Barbie, quick snapshots, because I didn't do what everybody else was. I finally watched it because I had time. Absolutely pure poison, but a little bit sugar-coated, so people didn't get it. Surprised nobody got it. I've not seen any reviews that get it. My crew got it. I said, I'm going to expose Civil War today, and one of the crew members was like, yeah. Started rattling off all my observations, but I didn't see them anywhere else. So I'm going to rattle those off. I'm going to get into the huge news on the Israeli strike on Iran. I'm going to get into Democrat mayor of Los Angeles Karen Bass wants wealthy residents to buy housing for homeless people. Yeah, sounds good on the surface. It's not. Huge fight with Elon Musk and the dictatorship in Brazil. And how many times have I told you the CIA and State Department ran that? Big breaking mainstream news documents. It's all over the news. The CIA, State Department got Bolsonaro banned. They're running the Brazilian communist government. Incredible information. I'm not bragging. I just told you that the last 4 years over and over again. Of course, I've talked to Bolsonaro's sons and all the rest of it, so I also knew about it. So we've got all that. We've got so much coming up today. We're going to break. Please remember, we're listener-supported. Can't fund this operation without you. We have amazing products that enrich your life and those around you when they use it. Vitamin Mineral Fusion, back in stock at InfoWarsStore.com. 40% off. And it's the last few days of DNA Force Plus for 50% off. And Turbo Force, 10-hour clean energy for 40% off. Those sales are going to end, but Vitamin Mineral Fusion will be going for probably a couple of weeks. Got a good supply of it in. InfoWarsStore.com, but Turbo Force, 10-hour clean energy, and DNA Force Plus, those big sales end by Monday. InfoWarsStore.com or 888-253-3139. All right, we'll be right back with hour number two, absolutely jam-packed with info they don't want you to know. All right, coming up next segment. Some stations don't carry this one. You're on the Alex Jones Show, this Friday edition. I'm going to give you my review of Civil War and Barbie. People are like, well, those things came out a while ago. Civil War's out now. Why are you talking about it now? Because my main job is not analyzing the propaganda. I figured it'd be what I thought. But I'm shocked that I heard a lot of conservatives say, oh, Barbie's actually pretty good. It shows both sides. And I heard that about Civil War. No, it doesn't. And people saying that really need to pull their heads out of their butts. I'm not mad at you. I'm just saying, wow, Civil War was worse than I thought it would be. Absolutely worse than I thought it would be. So we're going to talk about that coming up because it's important. It shows you the enemy's mind. They're trying to program people. But here's an important report. Thought police. Home visit for UK man who expressed anger online about Sidney Bishop being stabbed by an Islamicist. All he said is, we've got to, you know, stand up for our priest. Perpetrator needs to be punished. So the police and a psychologist come to the house like he's mentally ill. There's something wrong with him. But when they're trafficking thousands of kidnapped little girls per town, literally targeting white children, it's racially motivated, the Islamicist, that's all okay. And with all the crime and the knife stabbings and, you know, one of the most dangerous places in the world now is London, that's okay. But when somebody says, man, I'm sick of Christians being targeted, we need to stand up for Christians. Oh, here come the thought police, the communist social workers. Here's the video.
Hello, my name's Sean. I'm a senior nurse. I work at the NHS.
Yep. Name and number, please, mate.
Yeah, PC Green, Echo Bravo 428.
John Joe, PC Turner, Hastings Police Station.
Thank you.
959.
So what's this about, then?
So it was just a few
concerns. I won't film you, I'll just get it recorded.
Yeah, no, that's fine. Just a few concerns.
He's smelly right now, sorry.
It's alright.
He's like a mop, he just picks everything up.
He's lovely. What's his name?
Klaus. So why are you here today, sorry? No, yeah, you can all sit down, it's not a problem. You've literally just missed the missus and that. They've gone out like 10 minutes ago. Yeah. So what's the issue?
So it was just to, you know, obviously, what we've been told, that you might have a few concerns, a few things that are bothering you at the moment.
Yeah.
Whether there's
that's
anything
bothering everyone else in the country right now. So what are the concerns you're here for? Because this is religious discrimination right now, you know. Because you wouldn't be knocking on Muslims' doors if they had this conversation, because I already know why you're here. So this is religious.
Why do you think we're here?
I don't know. What's the priest told you?
They're just people have raised concerns.
What concerns?
About your views.
What views?
That you've got concerns about what's going on in Australia.
Yeah, so I'm an Orthodox Christian. Now you've turned up at my house because I went and see my priest. So I'm going to get you all on film because this is going straight to my solicitor.
So what are your concerns? Is there anything that we can help with?
No, firstly, I don't mean any disrespect to any of you. I don't want to sound abrupt here. If you can tell me why you're here.
So I think as PC Sands explained, so there was a report about some beliefs being expressed. So the reason I'm here is I work for the NHS. Sure. And if you're willing, I'm happy to talk and listen with you.
No, that's
about
fine.
If you've got any concerns about your well-being.
No, I'm fine. I'm fine. Klaus, out. Sorry.
No, because he's just jarring otherwise.
You can sit down, mate.
No, so my understanding is, now I'm not a police officer, I'm a nurse, so my understanding is...
So because I've questioned about the church not acting on the behalf of Christians, you're now turning up here with mental health nurses, assuming that I'm some right-wing nutter.
So no one assumes anything. Can what? I explain my point of view? And you're happy, I'm happy to...
No, no, that's fine, so, because I
All right, so that's the type of stuff going on everywhere. They put you in a database. They built giant FEMA camps all over the world under the UN in the name of the next COVID disaster. They say they're going to lock people up to question it coming in the future. Even Dr. Phil says, get ready, new lockdowns are coming. This is a totalitarian takeover, and they're creating lists of everybody, and we need to get in their face legally and lawfully and not be intimidated. When they try to shut us up, be 1,000 times louder. That's what this is all about. We need to expose that no matter what country you live in the Western world, we're being hit by the same propaganda, the same brainwashing, the same tactics. We have a common enemy. Our governments are illegitimate and have been seized and are at war with the people. All right, I'm going to review these two movies quickly because I've got all the other news to hit. I have a special guest in studio coming up the third hour today. I'm Alex Jones, Infowars.com, and Band.video are the coordinates of the resistance. We are now into hour number two in defiance of all the censors and tyrants that have tried to silence us. And we're on air because of your support and your will. And we salute you and we thank you. And just remind you how important you are. Spread the word, the articles, the videos, the links for man.video and infowars.com and Real Alex Jones on X. All right. So we already saw last hour the NPR CEO say, yeah, we lie to the public for their own good. We're taking control of information. We are going to do this for the greater good of society. That's cult brainwashing. And so I might go see a Hollywood film three times a year. I don't watch a lot of television. When I do, it's older movies or documentaries. Everybody wanted me to go watch Barbie last year and give you a review. Didn't watch it till I was flying back from vacation to Austin. Did watch it last week or a week and a half ago. And then last night I said, well, everybody's talking about civil war and people, even conservatives, are saying, well, it's not really political and you don't even know who the good guys are and the bad guys and it's not really clear. So I said, well, I don't believe Hollywood puts out any big budget, especially this director who's a big globalist, unless it's got their message. So I go to the movie and spoiler alert, I'm going to tell you what's in it. 30 seconds in, it shows a Trump-style president who comes off as disingenuous and slimy, lying about how the United States of America is winning the war. And I lean over and I say, it's going to all be about assassinating and killing Trump and driving him from power. And she says, how do you know that? And I said, I'll tell you after the show, but they're pre-programming that even if Trump gets elected, they're going to trigger a race war, civil unrest. They're taking the power, they've introduced legislation of the military, which is a coup itself, away from the executive branch. This is going to be the military turning against Trump and removing him. Then it shows a bunch of refugees and illegal aliens and people, and they're out covering it. And the journalist, of course, the liberal journalist, photojournalist of the heroes, I lean over, and she goes, I know, the journalist of the heroes, the mainline journalist. And I said, yeah, watch. Somebody's going to attack this group of illegal aliens with the UN handing out goods, because it's UN NGOs, if you look on the vest they're wearing, baby blue. It happens throughout the movie a bunch. And then a person runs in with an American flag, a big American flag, and suicide bombs them and almost kills the journalist, the photojournalist. And I lean over and I go, the president is still, quote, for America. That's Trump. That person just suicide bombed. Notice that American flag. It only happens over like 2 seconds. Boom, American flag, suicide bomb. And then it's tedious worship of the journalists. They're so moral. The New York Times journalist is the savior, the old black man. The older woman is the answer. And she's got the young girl who idolizes her. And there's weird lesbian-esque scene of her putting on a dress later and the girl looking at her and her looking at her. I mean, it's just loaded with crap. And they drive through the country trying to get to the front lines of Charlottesville where the Western forces, it's an American flag with two stars in the blue, have been stopped by the United States of America. And you still don't know who the good guys are and bad guys. Of course, we know. It's the bad guys of the United States of America. It's got to be defeated. It's got to be taken down. And then you start noticing all the soldiers, when you just get little glimpses of the United States of America, are white. All of them. And I'll get to that in a moment. But they go through these little towns where everything seems nice. Everything seems good, but everybody's white. And they go into this little store and they go, don't you know a civil war is going on? They say, we like to ignore it, pretend it's not happening in the small town. And the journalists, the young girl and the older woman keep saying, yeah, our fleas are in Colorado or they're in Missouri. They're on their farms pretending like nothing's happening. And when they say that, the evil white people like it, but it's all very subtle. Then they go into another town that's got some bigger buildings, and it's white men in traditional U.S. Army outfits, gear, whose uniforms are proper, battling Hispanics, Asians, and blacks with a few white people. And when they capture the white men, they line them up and machine gun them. And there's this scene with a Che Guevara guy with a heavy machine gun just killing them and shooting their dead bodies up. And just and then they go to another town and their buddy catches up with some other journalists. They drive past them. They go, where are they? They run into them a few miles up the road. Their car is empty. The doors are open. Their Toyota Sequoia, they're following them in a big Ford older, not Expedition, what were those really huge things that Ford had for a while but discontinued 10 years ago? The big old giant white truck. Excursion. So they go down this hill and there's these white guys loading all these dead brown people. There's still a few whites in the pile in the mass grave. And then the white guy kills the two Chinese reporters because they're not Americans. So that's that Soros fetish when they tried a few years ago to say there's white on Asian crime wave, when statistically that is the lowest crime in America is white on Asian on the FBI statistics. So the rarest crime is white on Asian. The per capita most common crime is black on Asian, not blaming blacks. It's just, it's there. And so because they're Asian, they're executed and thrown in the mass grave. But the old black man that stayed behind, the New York Times reporter, he drives the excursion over the white supremacist and kills him, knocks the young white girl into the pit of dead bodies. She climbs out. They drive away. But an evil white supremacist runs around and shoots bullets into the truck and wounds the old black man who dies later. There's another small town scene where the small town's the bad guys. They're all white people. And then they get into D.C. And the Western forces have 10-to-1 superiority. All the Apache helicopters, they're just killing all these troops. Amazing battle scenes. I mean, let me tell you, the movie's worth it to watch it if you know what you're watching. Just for the last 30 minutes, it is really well done. One of the best war scenes I've seen. I was on the edge of my seat. I mean, I'm not going to lie. The film's well done. A little tedious the first half, worshiping, the journalist. All white people. And then all of a sudden, you see this black female sergeant, and they're about to get through this fortress wall around the White House, and she's in command. I lean over to my wife. I go, she will kill the president. And she goes, how do you know? And I don't usually talk to her movies, but I'm whispering. I go, well, notice the black man before he died said the president's going to go down. He's like all these other dictators like Ceausescu and Hitler. So they're telling you. So the black woman storms through all these white Secret Service agents who were old white men. And there's the image of Secret Service agents being just slaughtered by the Western forces. And they go in and the president's writhing saying, oh, help me, don't kill me. And they've been ordered to kill him. And the Hispanic journalist says, wait, don't do it yet. I want a quote from this coward. And the president says, please don't kill me. He goes, that'll do. And they all smile as the U.S. military, the black woman, shoots him in the chest and head, and they take photos and pose with his dead body. So So Trump's a white supremacist. The small towns are evil. The whites have all got to be killed unless they're collaborating. And I already knew for the first 30 seconds that was what was going to happen. And I love, I didn't read spoilers. I didn't research it. I was like, yeah, it's going to be propaganda. $300+ million budget. I just, you know, wasn't even going to watch it. But there's a scene right before the invasion of D.C. begins where the cities are blown out, everything's ugly and dead bodies everywhere, but it shows a beautiful black helicopter with missile launchers at dawn flying over beautiful Virginia hills. And then it lands, and there's beautiful Western forces flags with the two stars and this huge, beautiful military of black, white, Hispanic, old, young, and they take lovingly the dead body of the New York Times reporter. And everything is just beautiful and crisp and blue skies. And you know these are the good guys. And they go into D.C. and they blow up the Lincoln Memorial and the Jefferson Memorial. And they blow up buildings with American flags on them. And American flags are falling in fire. But there's a new America. The anti-white America. And the black woman charges in there and kills Trump. And then the military poses with his dead body for 3 minutes of different shots of the dead body of the president, like he's Mussolini being posed with, and everything's happy. And the journalists are there and just relish the killing of Trump. And the average conservative publication thought, well, this is a good change. This isn't political. The hell it wasn't. And so then that leads us to this. Is the overhead shot still broken? No, it's been broken since the start of the show. Oh, there it is. So here's the Wikipedia on it. And if you'll read, you know, any of these disinformation, no one knows if it's political. It's not political. The director made sure to not make it political. The moment I heard it a month ago, this was about to come out in pre-propaganda promotion. It's not political. The director that wrote it doesn't want it to be political. I knew right then, because they know you're already waking up. They know that you're aware of stuff and that Hollywood's collapsing. So their new thing is to, oh, this is not political. You should go see it. Nothing you get from the Wikipedia has any reference to what really happens. Meanwhile, hundreds of articles a week and university studies and FBI reports that there's about to be a race-based civil war in America. And there's going to be new January 6th that are race-based, which it wasn't. And all hell's about to break loose, and America's going down. And they've introduced legislation in Congress and the Senate to withdraw the power of domestic military in the Insurrection Act from the president, which is a coup against the Constitution and executive branch and the people, because they think Trump's going to win, but then when he's president-elect, there's going to be giant uprisings that don't let him become the president. Yeah, there's Politico. The threat of civil breakdown is real. Here's LA Times, Metro News. Second U.S. Civil War becoming increasingly plausible as more insurrections likely, say major government-funded university study. Meanwhile, the reality is Dr. Phil saying they're going to use lockdowns and viruses for control as well. See, they're targeting everybody, but they're branding this as fighting the white supremacists. So it's everywhere. And they know exactly what they're doing. And creating all this crime and all this injustice and all this fear. But don't worry, things are collapsing because of the white men. What did the head of NPR say? She goes, we've got to lie to people because the white men are going to get us. White men? Like the white men running the central banks? Like the white men? Again, because they know how to control people. It's not just the white men. It's the power elites. The communist Chinese are funding all this. The ADL's funding it. It's the Southern Poverty Law Center. This is their control system. As they collapse the society and say, we've got to have a communist system now to save you from that. But the big banks are tax exempt. Google's tax exempt. You try to protest at Google, you get arrested. You protest at Google as a worker, you get fired. But everybody else can do whatever they want. because that destabilizes all the other institutions but the ones that are involved in the takedown of the country. Now let's move on to Barbie. I could have written notes on the flight back in my vacation, but I didn't. I just sat there and watched Barbie. And they tell you how they're breaking up the family. They tell you men oppress women, so now women are oppressing men. They say all the courts must be run by women. Women must be in charge of everything. But then after they create a utopia, then men will be allowed into positions of power again once there's balance. And it says it at the end. Generations from now, men will be allowed to hold positions of power, but now it's women. Yeah, women that follow the orders of the globalists offshore, who are almost all men. And they even tell you in the movie, the Ken character is talking to a corporate guy, and he goes, I love the patriarchy. Is it still here? And he goes, yeah, we just hide it better. There is no patriarchy. Just a human system of the species. So the movie begins with Barbie, who's created by this woman, you know, who's a felon or whatever, to empower women, and which is the opposite of what the CIA and the feminists claim, but that was in the dialectic. And it begins with the 2001 scene, where they basically rip off every famous scene, every archetypal scene. And instead of it being an obelisk that causes humans to evolve and turn into the Ubermenschen, it is now a 50-foot-tall, blonde, classic Barbie. And then the little girls who've been enslaved for being made to have dolls and made to want to have babies, they murder lifelike dolls that are babies. It's abortion. They bash their brains out. They destroy them. And Barbie, the goddess of feminine enlightenment, is teaching the young girls the art of sacrificing your children to Moloch. And then it just goes on from there. And they even admit, oh, it's the white corporate men that are doing this, but they created Barbie because they did want to empower women. And then they say, but everybody likes the new Ken doll. It's selling 10 to 1 what Barbie is. Everybody wants patriarchy. And he says, oh, no, we can't have that. We've got to empower the women. It is so sick. And it gets into AI and artificial realities and just all of this. It felt like I was on three hits of acid watching it. And, of course, the women that have separated themselves from men are clowns. They're unhappy. They're unhealthy. But they're cool. Because those are the women that are like that in real life, alone, taught to not have men. Now they're too old. They're pissed off. Well, it doesn't matter. You've got a club, the Hillary Hag Department. But again, they tell you men, just like Married with Children, and I played Paul Ehrlichman, who helped engineer this in the late 70s on TV, saying, you notice all the new shows show the family is bad and men is stupid and unreliable. We're doing that to end men so we can then take control of women, and then we believe there'll be a crash in births once women figure out the family's over, so we're doing it for depopulation. There's Paul Ehrlich. I played it 6 months ago on air. There's Paul Ehrlich saying, this isn't to help women. This is direct civilization and cause a collapse of society. So when you see a movie like Civil War or Barbie, it is a glass of poison they want you to drink. I mean, everything coming out of these people that run slave camps in China and human trafficking everywhere and shipping illegals and put them in sex slavery, and all the wars and the AI running the execution operations and mass murder in Gaza, it's out of pure evil manipulating your hopes and dreams that if you get with the program of the hyper fifth generation feminism, CIA Gloria Steinem, or if you as a man comport yourself to this, you'll be rewarded later when you'll be given nothing but betrayal and failure. But again, Hollywood's dying, but in its process of killing us, it knows it has to die. But it's dying too quickly. It's not winning. It's failing. Because women, even more than men, see through this now and realize it was all about disempowering them. It's scientists taking over your life. And just like when you would try to eradicate fire ants or another pest, you target the female's reproductive system. And that's the same thing that's happened here. They treat you like animals because you behave like animals and you let them manipulate you. And this isn't my opinion. It's a fact you're being manipulated. I'm not even telling you what to think or what to do about it, but just realize, start with square one. You're being controlled. You're being brainwashed. You're being targeted, not to empower you, but to enslave you. Your identity should be a free human who has free autonomy and free will and a free open market to be able to go out and compete. Anything else is a mad scientist dream where they can play God, but they can only play God when you give them that authority and buy into their pipe dreams and their gaslighting. Here's a clip from Barbie, the 2001 that I talked about.
Since the beginning of time, since the first little girl ever existed, there have been dolls. But the dolls were always and forever baby dolls. The girls who played with them could only ever play at being mothers, which can be fun, at least for a while, anyway. Ask your mother. This continued until...
Hello, Hal, do you read me? Do you read me, Hal?
Affirmative, Dave. I read you.
Open the pod bay doors, Hal.
I'm sorry, Dave. I'm afraid I can't do that.
They are given the spiritual transmission to murder their babies. From the beginning of time, all mammals want to take care of their babies, and female babies want to take care of babies. That's why a cow will take a dog that's alone, a puppy, and take care of it, even give it milk. Romulus and Remus in the founding of Rome. But now the goddess figure oversees the little girls, destroying their future, destroying their families, destroying their children, as they beat the brains out of their children, as they murder their children. And that causes the evolution. Well, here's the evolution not existing. Oh, I love gay frogs, but there'll be no more frogs. Greece facing population collapse as unexpected death soar. Elon Musk reacts as he predicted, as I predicted. China, total collapse by one-child policy. Population collapse looming in Greece as sudden deaths from the shots. See, it's real, sudden deaths. Record population reduction and fertility hits record low. Oh, don't put that little girl in a dress. You're oppressing her. See what it's all about? The state coming in to wreck your life and take full control of your entire future that doesn't exist. How China miscalculated its way to a baby bust. Wall Street Journal, just yesterday. Figure it out yet? Barbie's the big Trojan horse smiling down as the mother figure, telling them, murder your babies. Gloria Steinem, don't have your children. But Gloria Steinem has a whole bunch of kids. And Ted Turner has a whole bunch of kids. But he says you can't have children. Elon Musk has got 11 or 12 kids. I'm not saying he's perfect, but that's a big sign. All right, I'm going to shift gears in the geopolitical news, the political news, and so much more straight ahead. But they are taking our mobility, our freedoms. We're all being targeted. We're all being injected with poison. We are all under attack. You can pretend you're with the power structure and have Stockholm Syndrome, but you're not. You're being targeted for destruction. Rediscover your life force. Rediscover your will. Rediscover God. Do it now or be destroyed. You have been warned. A scientific tyranny of mad scientists has basically taken the planet over. They fear men and women coming together and unifying against them and having a pro-human future. It's happening. We can and we will prevail. The answer to their 1984 system is 1776. And I pledge myself, my name, my blood, my treasure, my soul on the altar of liberty. We're going to beat this dystopia. It will be humanity working through God's greatest triumph. All right, so I didn't even ask the archivist to do this last night. I don't need to do this. Any regular listener knows. Anybody can search engine it. I talked about it last week, 2 weeks ago when it came out the FBI and CIA were running operations against us with all this disinfo and dirty tricks and false narratives. And I have said probably 3,000 times in the last 4 or 5 years that the attacks on Bolsonaro in Brazil by Pfizer, by the UN, are run by the Pentagon, are run by the CIA and State Department, because I'd seen evidence and also know the cut of their operations. I know the cut of their jib. I know their signature. And I've talked to Bolsonaro's family and members of their government and was invited down there and was following it. And the same tactics of trying to take Trump off the ballot, they've successfully done to Bolsonaro there. Well, now all these new documents and investigations have come out, and Congress is now officially having hearings May 8th on this. I said weeks ago, we need hearings with Elon Musk, with the Brazilian government trying to indict him, moving and now saying they are going to indict the staff of Twitter in Brazil. Now for a week, X, formerly Twitter, has been blocked in Brazil because Elon Musk would not ban all these members of their Congress, even though they banned Bolsonaro for running for 8 years for questioning the obviously stolen election 2 years ago. They're now trying to ban and are banning everybody else. And we have an exodus of Brazilian journalists to the United States because they're being arrested. And I said, what you see in Brazil is what they want to do here. And it's being run by the CIA and by the State Department. So breaking, U.S. congressional hearing set. Elon to testify May 8th. This is incredible. Overhead shot. Defends free speech. Elon Musk, the head of the Supreme Court, fines $20,000 a day for any free speech, even memes. Arrest ex-employees. Criminalizes Elon Musk. Cut off X completely from Brazil. Here's all the letters where it's happening. Other Brazilian outlets reporting on it are being shut down by order of the head of the Supreme Court, who literally could be cast as Lex Luthor in his actions and the way he looks, posing in photos with a big cape, looking like Nosferatu or something, and totally unself-aware, thinking looking like a tyrant dictator is powerful. This is incredible. So now, journalist Michael Schellenberger is reporting on all these documents that have broken on the years of U.S.-U.K. military intelligence planning behind sweeping Brazil censorship and mass arrest. The evidence is overwhelming. And now there's congressional hearings. See how it's happening? I've talked to members of Congress, not just on air yesterday, but off air. They are moving to try to have weaponization hearings again, with one of the centerpieces being what was done to me with Sandy Hook and the FBI, not just the whistleblower, not just the leak, but the fact that the chief lawyer for the FBI in Connecticut admits on the stand he created the lawsuits, went and set them up, did it all. William Oldenburg. Never said his name or know who he is until he did this. So this is all beta testing for everybody else. That's why Brazil's important, because the criminals running our government, the Obamanoids, the Atlantic Council, have done this to them. They're doing it to us. So it's like having Death Star plans, folks, whether it's Australia or Brazil, whether it's Germany or Canada. People are like, why do you cover this? Because it's the same damn enemy. The tactics, the operations, we have to unify to fight a global threat. We need a global solidarity understanding of this. And it's happening. Congressional hearings. May 8th. It begins. And spotlighting these roaches is what needs to happen. And I'm talking about the Brazil's head of their Supreme Court. So here's the journalist, William Michael Schellenberger. Here it is.
Of the U.S. House of Representatives released over 500 pages of confidential Brazilian court documents relating to censorship demands on X, formerly Twitter. The committee had obtained them from X through its subpoena powers. The documents show a single Superior Electoral Court Justice, Alexandre de Moraes, demanding permanent bans on over 150 elected officials and journalists. De Moraes demanded these bans in secret processes without explanation or means of appeal and across social media platforms. Given the dependence of elected leaders on social media, these demands for bans may constitute electoral interference. In one case, de Moraes demanded that all major social media platforms, including at least one, Twitter, which did not publish the offending material, ban a federal congressman named Marcel Van Hatten. The TSC had claimed that Van Hatten had criticized the election results, but not only had Van Hatten's video not been related to the elections, it was actually a criticism of the Labor Department. It was released one day before the election, therefore it couldn't have been about the results. In many ways, Brazil's sweeping censorship system is unique to Brazil. Brazil's censorship industrial complex is located in the judiciary rather than in the executive branch, as it is in the United States and in Europe, in the European Commission. In the United States, it's in the Department of Defense, Department of Homeland Security, National Science Foundation, and other federal agencies. But in other ways, Brazil's censorship simply reflects the most advanced form of the censorship industrial complex, the vision of which was created by U.S. and U.K. government officials, particularly ones working for the military and intelligence agencies, as early as 2017. Our work revealed that current and former agents from the U.S. Department of Defense, the CIA, the Department of Homeland Security, and the British Ministry of Defense all developed comprehensive censorship programs. The Department of Defense and the National Science Foundation, for example, have been caught funding the creation of censorship tools, including AI-based ones, for Facebook, Twitter, and other social media platforms to engage in mass censorship. Beginning in early 2017, several military and intelligence agencies and agents from the U.S. and U.K. governments developed the same censorship tactics that Brazil's Superior Electoral Court justice was just caught using. The tactics they proposed include the following. First, discrediting popular and populist journalists and politicians. Second, creating specialized government or government-funded spy units to collect evidence on people suspected of spreading misinformation. Third, the use of third-party influencers to demand that social networks change their terms of service. And then fourth, pressure advertisers to boycott social media platforms that allow free speech, something that actually worked on Facebook. While the TSC and Brazilian Supreme Court Justice Alexandre de Moraes are driving Brazil's draconian measures, much of the research behind their methods and the push for greater censorship in Brazil appear to have been funded by the U.S. government agencies. The TSC's model reflects the public-private partnership model pioneered by U.S.-funded front groups for government censorship. TSC's 2022 strategic plan states, in order to respond to the challenges that disinformation imposes on the integrity of elections and on democracy itself, the program adopts a network model of organization and functioning based on the mobilization of electoral justice bodies and the formation of strategic partnerships with multiple participants, including the most diverse government agencies, press and fact-checking organizations, internet providers, civil society entities, academics, and political parties, unquote. This playbook cites several reports from the most influential censorship industrial complex organizations, including Aspen Institute, Stanford Internet Observatory, or SIO, which receives funding from the National Science Foundation and was created by the Department of Homeland Security, DHS, to censor disfavored views about COVID-19 and the 2020 election in the U.S. The TSC's plan cites Stanford Election Integrity Partnership's final report. As Public has previously reported, the EIP advocated for censorship of political views and recommended that platforms censor city members of Congress. The key strategist behind the Election Integrity Project is Rene D'Aresta, a former CIA fellow. Graphica, a partner in EIP, is also cited in the TSC strategic plan. Graphica receives funding from the Department of Defense, the Navy, the Air Force, the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, known as DARPA. Now, in response to our inquiries about Graphica's relationship with the TSC in Brazil, the Institute for Technology and Society, Rio, and the Department of Defense, a spokesperson for Graphica told us, quote, we produced a research report on a pro bono basis with ITS Rio in 2019 to analyze the online information environment in Brazil. We were not aware that Brazil's TSC had cited this report or any of our other public work. Graphica spokesperson said, quote, we have never received U.S. government funding in relation to Brazil and never communicated with the U.S. government about the work conducted with ITS Rio, unquote. Now, the TSC used Brazilian fact-checkers' reports as a basis for censorship directives. These fact-checkers, such as Agência Lupa, Aos Fatos, UOL, Conferere, and Estadão, were all certified by the Poynter Institute. Poynter Institute receives funding from, you guessed it, National Endowment for Democracy, which according to the New York Times was created to, quote, do in the open what the Central Intelligence Agency or CIA has done surreptitiously for decades, unquote. The Washington Post has also characterized NED as a CIA cutout. In a clear example suggesting U.S. government backing for TSC's actions in Brazil, quote, disinformation experts at multiple events held by Atlantic Council's Digital Forensic Research Lab pushed for extensive censorship in Brazil. In 2022, the Foundation for Freedom Online reported that disinformation experts on a 2019 DFR-led panel claimed that private encrypted messages were a threat.
All right. Now, if you're a TV viewer, I keep showing official images, and I look these up. These are the official images that the Brazilian Supreme Court minister, Alexandre de Moraes, puts out of himself. And in every video shot, he acts like a crazed lunatic, and he's a dictator. He runs Brazil. He decides who can run for president, who can run for Congress. He bans free speech. He arrests people en masse. They put tens of thousands of people that wouldn't take the COVID shot in jail after they kicked Bolsonaro out. And he runs around with black capes going, oh, in front of the TV. I mean, imagine if I showed up on air in a black cape like Nosferatu and started flapping it around. And I was arresting people for their speech. And I was banning people from running for president who are in the lead in the polls. But that's the lunatic judiciary that we have in America in many cases and that we have in places like Brazil. I mean, look at him. He goes and poses in front of hundreds of TV cameras and starts flapping a black cape around. Megalomaniac, out of control lunatic, run by the CIA, run by the FBI, all of it controlled because they've got dictatorial scum that'll do what they're told. They've got a Supreme Court they control in Brazil. The majority. They say a few are good, but they're outvoted. Bolsonaro would not forcibly inject his population. So that's where we are, ladies and gentlemen. People in Gargamel outfits. People in Count Dracula outfits. Running around trying to dominate and control civilization. Now, let me pull this up. I got to pull it up on my X account because I want to show the folks that said it. What I was wanting to do earlier. But real Alex Jones here. I'm going to shift gears to another big subject. This is what's happening in Canada. Overhead shot, please. So, it has become a major, huge campaign issue for now 3 weeks in Canada that Pierre Poilievre, or however you say his name, Pierre Poilievre, who's the leader of the Conservative Party that's already got a majority of the election was held now, of double-digit points, and the enemies of reality come out and say, Canada doesn't need an Alex Jones protege. And that's being parroted. And that's being put out everywhere. And this is such a key story because this is on national news in Canada. This is being put on the CBC. This is being put on the other channels. I've seen dozens of versions that I've been looking for. It trended a couple times on the top of X that Pierre Poilievre is Alex Jones. And it'd be like if I said the Olympics are coming up in the summer. And then somebody else said the Olympics are coming up in the summer. You'd say, well, everybody knows that. You wouldn't say you were copying me. He's responding to the central bank digital currencies. He's responding to the vaccine passports they tried to force and the lockdowns and the debanking of people and legislation to ban free speech. So you can say that the conservative leader isn't perfect. I don't know if he's good or bad. He's at least saying he opposes all this and all the things that he is opposing are mainstream admitted things, like the Gulf of Mexico is off the coast of South Texas or off the west coast of Florida or off the east coast of Mexico. And then if somebody else says, yeah, the Gulf of Mexico is south of Texas, you don't go, well, why are you agreeing with Alex Jones? It's a fact. Or Henry Ford founded Henry Ford. Henry Ford founded Ford Motor Company. So the man set to be the next prime minister of Canada is saying the same things as me because it's real things going on But they turned side-by-side videos of us together and say, look, he's getting all his points from Alex Jones. No, there's a global awakening and a global resistance to this. So here's an example of their compilations as they try again to gaslight you. No matter what the nation states try, the globalists will dominate.
A group of globalist billionaires.
The World Economic Forum is a globalist organization of the UN to penetrate governments.
We will ban all of my ministers and top government officials from any involvement in the World Economic Forum.
And out of that, they will call for central bank digital currencies to be rolled out.
The central bank is now promoting a possible proposal to bring in a digital currency.
You get the internet ID. That's then tied to your digital global ID that tracks everywhere you go, what you do, what you buy.
To answer your question, I will never allow the government to impose a digital ID. Yeah.
All right, so that's where we are on that front. But they can't have their cake and eat it too and officially be trying to put in a CBDC, which they're doing here, which Europe's doing, Australia's doing. And then China's already got one for 5 years. And then turn around and say, oh, it doesn't exist. And because you oppose it, you're crazy because Alex Jones is bad. It's absolute, total, and complete ridiculous desperation. And the good news is people are waking up big time. Folks are waking up massively. I got a few other stories I want to hit before our special surprise guest is going to be in studio here with us. But I wanted to talk about a little bit more of what is unfolding in our society and in our culture. And so I thought I would play clip 12, National Guard Captain Timothy Nick blows up Jan 6 narrative, accuses U.S. government of lying to the American people. Now the issue here is, Trump publicly called for National Guard on TV, and then the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Mike Milley, threatened to resign if they did. He wanted security on January 6th. They said, no, that's tyranny. Then they turned around and said Trump never did that, even though it was on record. But then people love a whistleblower, so here's a captain who was involved in all of it blowing the whistle.
I'm here today to aid the subcommittee in resolving factual errors in the official record of what happened on January 6th, 2021, specifically regarding the alleged District of Columbia National Guard, delayed response caused by critical presidentially appointed Senate-confirmed Pentagon senior officials. I was concerned by the events that unfolded that day on the United States Capitol. As a federal officer of the United States Secret Service and a former state trooper with the Florida Highway Patrol, my heart goes out to all law enforcement officers, sisters and brothers that held the line that day to restore public order to the chaos. I'm here today with my counsels, Lachlan McKillen and Dan Meyer of law firm Tully Rigney. The firm has advised me, beginning with my role as a confidential source to the Select Committee to investigate the January 6th attack on the United States Capitol. When my confidentiality was breached, it was Dan who intervened to ensure I was protected as a military whistleblower. First, I want to explain my role on January 6th. I was assigned as aide-de-camp, the personal assistant to Major General William Walker, the commanding general of D.C. National Guard. It was my only second day on the job. Please focus on alleged facts found in the November 16, 2021 Department of Defense Inspector General's multidisciplinary review into the D.C. National Guard response and Department of Defense's role that day. I can say unequivocally that the Inspector General's review is riddled with inaccuracies, misstatements, and perhaps false flags and narratives regarding how critical Pentagon senior officials responded when our republic was under great stress. For instance, during a conference call at 2:31 p.m., with members of United States Army, U.S. Capitol Police, Metropolitan Police Department, District of Columbia Government, and U.S. Secret Service Uniform Division, the U.S. Army's Lieutenant General Walter Piatt, Director of Army Staff, and the Army's Lieutenant General Charles Flynn, Director of Chief of Staff of Operations, were on the call. Also on was Colonel John Lubas, Executive Officer to the Secretary of the Army. The Army falsely denied that General Flynn was ever on the call. This is false and material on its face. Lieutenant Flynn was on the call and even participated in discussions. The defense inspector's review also rounds language, papering over the fact that Lieutenant General Pyatt and Lieutenant General Flynn, while on the call, discussed how they did not like the optics. That is a direct quote. And they stated it would be in their best military advice to recommend to the Secretary of the Army, Ryan McCarthy, to deny the request from Command General William Walker to deploy the D.C. National Guard and aid U.S. Capitol Police in restoration of order, liberty on Capitol Hill. In addition, former Secretary of the Army Ryan McCarthy claims he was on a 2:31 p.m. call and spoke on that call. This is false, unless he was in the room shadowing the call and he did not speak nor identify himself. He was not on the call. He was en route to Washington, D.C. regional office at the Federal Bureau of Investigation to support that agency's concept of operations plan for January 6. He went on to claim that he called and spoke to Major General Walker at least twice, ordering the deployment of the D.C. National Guard. This is also false. At no time did General Walker take any calls, nor did we ever hear from the Secretary on any of the ongoing conference calls or the secure video teleconferencing throughout the day. This I know because I was with the Command General the entire time recording events. Throughout the day, Major General Walker told by staff officers to stand by with respect to deploying to the Capitol Hill. Only at 5:09 p.m. in the early evening, which I wrote down in my wheel book, was the D.C. Guard given order to deploy and move to the Capitol to assist Capitol Police. We arrived too late. One American lay dead with other sisters and brothers injured, including federal and local law enforcement officers. We were ready and standing by. I know if we were able to deploy immediately when General Walker made the request, the National Guard could have helped end civil disturbance and restored public order quickly. The Army National Guard motto is always ready, always there. The D.C. National Guard was ready to help and assist Capitol Police, but we were not allowed to do our job due to paralyzed decision-making by Acting Secretary of Defense Chris Miller and Secretary of the Army Ryan McCarthy. This led to federal leadership in the Pentagon. This led to a crisis in federal leadership at the Pentagon and delayed the D.C. response by 3 hours and 19 minutes. Thank you for the opportunity to appear before you today and articulate the facts as they happened. I look forward to answering any questions you may have.
And you add that to Trump asking for 10,000 and being refused by Milley when he's the president. He should have fired Milley. We know what they did. And they sent half the Capitol Police away for crowd control and for traffic control. This was a setup. We now know it. They false arrested, fake arrested feds, fist bumped, took their stuff off, took their cuffs off. It's incredible. That's all coming out. There's been a major event in front of the courthouse where Trump's being tried in New York. Someone just torched themselves. We'll cover it when we come back. All right. Reporter, very popular ex-poster, Dom Lecrae is going to be joining us in studio this hour, a little bit of the next hour ahead of Jay Dyer. We have some shocking footage we're about to show you. Viewer discretion is advised. It's another event like we saw in front of the Israeli embassy earlier this year, where a man set himself on fire to protest the Gaza war. We don't know why this has been done yet. They say a man. We have footage, CNN tried to say it was a mass shooting because they'll turn anything into that. That's not what happened. A man has set himself on fire outside the Manhattan courthouse where Trump is on trial. Viewer discretion is advised. Here it is. New York, this they did get a fire extinguisher on him about 30 seconds instead of a couple minutes, like DC, when the man screaming "Free Palestine" torched himself. We don't know why this has happened. They say it's a man. I don't know that, but this person is more in like a Buddhist pose, similar to what we saw in Vietnam with the Buddhist monks torching themselves. We will see if the person left a letter or information. If it's pro-Trump, you know, they'll probably suppress it. and claim he's a white supremacist or something. But here is CNN trying to say it's a mass shooting.
What do you say? We also are seeing an active shooter is in the park outside the court. We have a man who he has set fire to himself. A man has emblazoned himself outside of the courthouse just now. Our cameras are turning right now. A man has now lit himself on fire outside of the courthouse in Manhattan, where we are waiting for history to be made. A full jury panel is gone. We are watching a man who is fully emblazoned in the front of the courthouse today. We are watching multiple fires breaking out around his body and person. We have seen an arm that has been visible that has been engulfed in total flames. There is chaos that is happening. People are wondering right now if people are in danger. I'm looking across the courtyard. There is a man racing to his aid. There is coats coming off to try to put out the fire. We have members of security details. NYPD is rushing to the scene. They are trying to come out. Officers are on the scene. A fire extinguisher is right now present being put on this man to try to put out. People are climbing over barricades to try to separate the public to put out the flame on this man. He has lit himself out in fire in front of the courthouse right now. We are watching as the flame. We can smell the air. I can smell the burning of some sort of a flesh. I can smell the burning of some sort of agent being used as well as an accelerant to put that fire. I smell an actual fire extinguisher having been displayed. I see a person whose body appears to be on the ground being surrounded by officers. I have multiple officers. I count about a dozen officers on the scene. The fire is still burning. It's now in multiple locations.
Oh, I can tell you. This person is not going to live. They did a more intense job than the man that set himself on fire in front of the Israeli embassy. This was gallons of fuel. I would guess 5 gallons. He spread a big circle around himself. Let's show the footage of the Buddhist monk setting himself on fire. We don't know why this has happened. We don't know if it's a leftist protesting Trump. I would doubt that. I'm going to bet, and this is speculation, that it's going to be a Trump supporter. And I'm going to ask Trump supporters, don't do this. Look, we need to politically be engaged, culturally engaged. We need to be exposing what's going on. We don't need extreme acts of civil disobedience like this. This is very, very sad. Dom Lucrey is joining us in studio coming up for at least an hour. Infowars.com, tomorrow's news today. Pray for this poor soul. What an insane time the globalists have put us into. Like Klaus Schwab said, an angrier world. We'll be right back. Viewer discretion is advised. A person, they're saying a man has torched himself spectacularly, repeating what happened in front of the Israeli embassy a few months ago, but with even more gasoline, that's clear, in a inferno of fire in front of the Trump criminal show trial. Dom Lucrey is with us in studio for at least an hour right now, but let's roll that footage. No pun intended, the temperature on this campaign 2024 is really high. The country is going up in flame. We don't know why this person did it. They're saying it's a man. I don't have any evidence of that. I guess it probably is a man. Generally, it's men that would do something like this. That women just generally don't psychologically do things like that, but most men don't as well. I can tell you this person will not be surviving. Very, very sad. I would ask people not to be violent to others or themselves. We're going through a major shift in human development. And the globalists are using a lot of psychological warfare to create an angrier world. Dom, there's so much to talk about. Dom Lucrey is here with us. He's a 29-year-old veteran, independent journalist, Christian. He was born in North Augustine, South Carolina. He is vice president of a hip-hop record label before starting to speak out in 2020, and he reaches tens of millions a day. Started posting on Twitter in November of last year, and now it's X, which has gained traction and got him where he is now. He's at Dom_Lucrey. So, Dom, thank you so much for coming on. You've been on once before. I follow your stuff all the time. Everybody calls you Lucrey, so I got it wrong. It's Dom Lucrey, so we can get that right. That's a cool name. We had a lot of topics to cover, a lot of clips you wanted to get to, but now this just happened 10 minutes ago. Wow, what do you make of this?
It's just, I think it's more proof that we are entering a new era of depravity, and people are just very fed up with what they're seeing online, what they're seeing on the news, and they're trying to get active in any way they feel like it's possible, whether it might be setting yourself on fire, doing protests, or several bans that we've been seeing over the past couple of months. I just think people are fed up.
No, I agree with you, because it's a symbol when you're willing to torture yourself that I can do a lot to you. I'm pissed. But I'm not going to give you what you want, make you the victim, so I'm going to do this. Yeah. And I'm not encouraging it, but it's happening more and more.
Hmm. Very unfortunate.
Elaborate on that.
Well, I just think where we at right now, it's a lot easier for those people to do it to themselves. It's I think this would be the second time we've seen someone set themselves on fire. And it's, unfortunately, I think it also shows the influence that everyone has on the things that we do post online. I feel like there's a good chance the first individual that set himself on fire led to the motivation of the second one. But
yeah, just like mass shootings, they admit it causes the next one. I hope this stops.
Yeah. I would hope it stopped too, but the thing I would feel that make it a little bit harder for it to stop is the amount of attention that it garnished. So this is the second time we've seen someone set themselves on fire, but each time that it's happened, it's gone extremely viral. Most of the time it's for attention or to shed light on a specific cause. So it makes sense if this would be a new trend, if it constantly is making the media headlines that it has.
Absolutely. So looking at this persecution of Trump and how it's backfiring in every community, particularly the black and Hispanic, what's your gut level? Because nobody knows this dead reckoning is going to happen the next 199 days for this election.
I feel like what we're seeing right now is a major cultural shift that black people specifically aren't afraid to be honest with themselves and be honest about their traditional values being more so conservative than liberal. Majority of the things that we're seeing right now that black people are pushing are just conservative values. They are wanting to be in the children's lives a little bit more. We're seeing black people now requesting for more policing, surprisingly, in some of their neighborhoods due to immigration. They're seeing the importance of police to be there now that they are the victims and no longer the predators to some of these cities. So we're witnessing just the black community as a whole understand the culture of conservatism, understand that it does lead to safety, and that's just where we're going, from hip-hop all the way down to the urban communities.
Well, you know, in the 50s and 60s, this has been documented, the communists tried to recruit black people. They found they were harder to recruit than white people or anybody else. They just would not accept it.
I believe that completely, because we think back at the times of Black Wall Street when a Democratic governor, James B.A. Robinson, ordered for the National Guard to bomb in Tulsa, Oklahoma. It was a Democratic governor. That's why they teach us in school about the Black Wall Street bombing, but never tell us who ordered it. It's just what was before is now. Black people a little bit harder to control because their culture itself was always anti-government. And if you can prosper while being anti-government, if you can prosper without the government assistance, the government's only logical action is to implement new ways to make you depend on them.
Well, that's what Louis Faircon, you can say what you want, he's dead on saying anybody, but he singles out black people, just become self-sufficient and it's game over. And we know before the Great Society with LBJ, he wrote letters saying, I'm going to control the black people. I'm going to get the men out of the house. I'm going to pay the women. I'm going to destroy their culture, because I'm not defending segregation or Jim Crow, but that which doesn't kill you makes you stronger. Black people had incredibly successful banks, businesses, hotels, doctors, universities until the Great Society.
I completely agree. And he did it first by attacking the house. Yet again, it should show and exemplify the importance of having a strong household, because that's the first thing that they attacked. They wanted to have more single mothers. They wanted to have more children on their own, because if you don't have a parent at the house, then the government get the chance to be your mom and your dad, and they get to tell you what to do, and they get to lead you astray, and then they can be the solution. So, and oftentimes, when you don't have parents, the government becomes your problem and your solution, and that's just right where they want you, to my own opinion.
Have you seen Pinocchio, where they, it's like a ritual, they get them to commit crime, and they turn into jackasses, and they load them on slave ships?
I haven't seen it.
Guys, pull up the Pinocchio scene. Children turn to donkeys, but it's an archetype where they take them, they get them to commit crime, and then it transmutes them into jackasses who are then loaded on slave ships. And that's
it. That's very interesting.
Well, you've got Ice Cube coming out talking about the fact that the CIA approached them and said, do all this. He wouldn't do it. But I've talked to major MTV producers that were there at the time. They say that's true.
Yeah, completely true. The CIA is the government has their hand in hip hop. The thing is, the government has their hand in Hollywood, and I think Americans as a whole have been able to accept that somewhat after the late 90s. People start to accept, okay, there's a good chance there's some CIA infiltration in Hollywood. But in the 2020s, I think we're in an era that people are seeing the same is for music itself. From almost all brands of music, if you hear things about the alleged lawsuit with P. Diddy of cameras being recorded everywhere for high-profile individuals to be sent to possible government agencies. It kind of validates some of those concerns as well.
Well, I was going to ask you about P. Diddy, and he's got multiple names over the years. He changes them, but he literally, they're now saying cameras and politicians and leaders. It wasn't just Epstein. This is a model.
Yeah. Yes.
Speak to that, and then why do you think it's breaking now?
I agree with what you said. I love what you said just now. You said it's a model. So it shows that it's just something that generally does work. Regardless of what level it is, there is a system to blackmail people to, in turn, get the power and get the resources that they have. It's a model that constantly worked. There's no need to change it. I don't feel like Diddy necessarily copied it from Epstein, but I do definitely believe that it's around that circle. It's just the common culture of it, of you being compromised to get what you want. It's very common.
And it looks like a big party until you're in it, and now they got you. Now you're their slave.
I like that. Yeah, it looks like a party until you get in there and you see that everyone's in there actually in chains. The only reason why they won't leave. Majority of people in the party aren't celebrating. They're forced to stay.
You got to watch Pinocchio. You haven't seen it?
I've seen Pinocchio, but I didn't remember about this. It was ever since I was a kid. I ain't seen it since.
We're going to keep it rolling while you're talking, because this is an archetype. I guess Walt Disney was telling us how the whole thing works. But they give them liquor, they give them drugs, they give them everything, and then they turn into slaves.
Yeah, they dumb us down. The black race, in my opinion, has been the most dumbed down on any other race and the most targeted. Without a doubt, there's even stories of back in the past where we have proof that the CIA put drugs into the hoods, like back in Harlem.
Oh, that's declassified, and crack cocaine.
Yeah, but what make it more interesting is that they only started locking up Negroes when they were selling it in white neighborhoods. But they found out when they started selling it in their own hoods that they were letting them go. So that's targeted destruction. That's targeted submission. They were targeting a specific group of people to fall down there. I mean, to fall down that line.
100%.
It's been targeted. And it makes sense because we are the top dollar. If you look at Black Friday, if you look at electronics, if you go on Walmart or anywhere in America, no one is spending as much as black people. And we don't even make up the top of the population. We spend the absolute most in America. And a lot of people, they'll criticize us like, oh, you like clothes, you like shoes and things. But without blacks, who's going to keep these things profitable? We're spending the absolute most on the most frivolous things here that does nothing to benefit us. It's not good for us ourselves, but it's very good for the creators, for those that's profiting off of our dollar.
But again, they targeted black people starting in the 50s to control them, but the model was being tested. Now it's been deployed against everybody.
Yes, I believe that wholeheartedly. Black people are just a model, and it isn't nothing specifically against black people as a whole. It makes sense from a population. I would target a smaller population first to test out the kinks into the armor before I issue it out to the masses, because the masses hold more power than the minorities. And that's just anywhere. That you would do that with plants, you would do that with animals, and you do it with people.
Absolutely. That's why they targeted black folks. It was a small group that people wouldn't stand up for.
Yes.
They thought. So they said, we can do what we want here.
And it makes sense, because they created the narratives not to stand up for them. They made sure they pushed those narratives out before they start usher in black people to validate those narratives.
That's even in the Godfather movie, which Mario Puzo wrote, which was based on a composite of real families. The Godfather is a true story. They just changed the names. Guys, pull up the Godfather commission meeting, Godfather gangster meeting clip. And it's not even racist, because what they say really happened in these meetings. They say, I want the drugs kept in the colored areas. Have you seen that clip?
I've watched The Godfather, but I just don't remember.
Well, the point is Hollywood's telling us what they're doing to the movies.
Yeah, so that way when it comes out to like platforms like this, they can invalidate it and say, well, you got that from us.
Absolutely, absolutely. So what do you make of where this is going? I asked the prediction. Where do you think it's going with Trump?
I think he's going to win in a landslide, but I don't think it's going to be without resistance. We're going to see a whole lot more race baiting. We're going to see a whole lot more drama coming up around the summer. The summer, I can see a whole lot more heat. And we'll start seeing a lot of stories of black people that were killed unarmed prior to 2024. Pay attention to the dates of these people that they're going to start saying are victims. We just recently seen about a month ago, they were trying to make one of these black individuals famous for saying he couldn't breathe. But yet we found out through the New York Post, it was 2 years old. Why would they introduce this story 2 years late? And more importantly, why did they sit on the story without pushing it when it happened originally? They have these things set up and lined up for propaganda, for narratives, for specific times. People are nothing but pawns, whether it be life or death.
You're right. So what do we do to short circuit that? Because they are literally programming that if Trump wins, ahead of that, they're going to have racial divides. They're going to stir stuff up, try to make it racial when the globals are attacking us all. And then they're going to try to say he can't even go into office and have riots so big they remove him before he ever gets in. They admit that's their plan. They've got movies like Civil War.
I believe the best way to fight it is just making sure we conquer the majority. If we conquer the majority, they won't have anyone to listen to them. If we constantly are keep winning this culture war, if we constantly are fighting back against the fake news, you can see some of the hardest liberals are using our keywords now. That's how you know we won the culture. They'll use words that you've coined. People that don't even like these platforms or don't like conservatives can't help but use the culture that we've created. Almost any news, if people don't like it, they call it fake news, and that came from Trump. That's a cultural win. All the way down to us rejecting the propaganda, rejecting the forced homosexuality, or rejecting the destruction of nuclear family. We are winning the majority. I think the best way to fight back is just increase our numbers.
You're right, though. As negative as things are, Don Luker, people now get it, and the numbers show that. So the system's using psychological warfare to divide and conquer, but when it stops working, they just double down. But at a certain point, they're failing. Trump goes places, he gets mobbed. Biden goes places, everybody's hiding from him. Nobody's buying this, it seems like.
No, nobody is all. And another thing is, the President Trump's motorcade looks a lot better than Biden's itself, or even the attention around it. It's as if people won't even come outside to see Biden. I remember when President Trump came to Nashville and there was miles of lines just to see a man who's supposedly or allegedly supposed to be a former president. Yet the current active sitting president has no one that even cares. No one cares. And more importantly is, when Obama was president, it was undeniable that he had aura. It was undeniable that he had a fan base.
He won those elections.
They had people with the Obama shoes. People even had the Obama phone just because it was attached.
He got mobbed when he went out in public. Mm. You know, Trump gets mobbed, Obama got mobbed. But with Biden, it's not happening.
Not there. It's not there. And people will say, oh, well, we aren't addicted to Biden like Trump. In this era of social media, I find it hard to believe. If you really, really like that guy, I'll go out there to find
him. Who believes he got 9 million more votes than Obama?
Impossible. Just completely impossible.
So what do you think is going to happen with Trump?
I think he'll take over. I think he'll win. But I think it'll be a lot of drama prior to the win. And most importantly, I think what'll happen after his run is he's about to set the precedent for conservatism, or at least the conservative party as a whole. Because after Trump, I'm focused on what happens after. People are going to wonder, what's the new model? Do we go right back to the deep state? Do we sit idly by? Do we submit back to the old ways? Because in my opinion, the powers that be already accept that President Trump is going to win. They're preparing for who's coming after. And they're preparing also by placing bad actors into the conservative party. I believe we're about to start seeing a lot of rappers, a lot of actors put on that red hat just to lead us astray.
Yeah, what do you make of Dwayne Johnson, former of The Rock, coming out saying?
Like him, yeah. People like him worries me. And the thing is, it's kind of a contradiction because, of course, I'm sitting here saying we need to fight back, increase our numbers. But when you have Hans like Dwayne The Rock Johnson, who's supposedly, I mean, he does a lot of stuff that's just inorganic. He's been in and out 3 times. Every time he claimed was the first time he'd been for a promotion. Like, he's completely inauthentic.
Well, remember when he said, it's the best thing for me to go for Biden before. Now I'm not. He knows everybody's against him. So now he's only saying it tacitly.
Business move, yeah. And I feel like those people could be infiltrators. They're not saying that they are, but if they were, they would do a lot of damage.
Oh, I wouldn't turn my back on him.
Great. Yeah, it's just.
But remember when he wouldn't give money to Maui, but he wanted to get it himself?
Yeah.
He's worth like $1 billion.
Yeah, and Maui, I think, was the first time you could see it really hit him. He was responding back to a few people on X about the Maui situation, because I don't think The Rock was aware, because he doesn't pay attention to his socials like that, of how much backlash Oprah Winfrey gets if you even stand beside her. Because people were more so like, as soon as they saw him stand by Oprah.
Everybody knows that she was pimping for Hollywood.
Yeah. Everyone knows it. So if they see her doing any type of fundraiser, they have a bad taste in their mouth. Now, someone could say that working with Oprah is what kind of led him to want to push conservatism a little bit more. But at the same time, his father was a conservative, and Rock was originally registered as a conservative in 2004, I believe it was. But he was registered as a conservative. I don't even know. Has he ever registered as a Democrat? I know he said he supported Biden for the Instagram post when they were running. But he has a pretty conservative background. Which is kind of strange because...
What do you think happens to the Democratic convention? I think they try to replace Biden.
I don't know. I've seen that and people are saying that. It's just that they wouldn't have much time. And if they did, it would be so blatant that it's a steal. If they were to introduce a new candidate right now, after all the traction that President Trump has had, nobody would believe they stand a chance. It's far too late. Too much has happened. Too much good press. I mean, God, all the way. And not saying the mugshot is a good thing, but the reaction from it.
No, it was. It backfired.
Yeah.
Because people see it's anti-establishment. So they never give up, then so what, do they assassinate Trump?
Yeah, they would never give up. I don't think they would assassinate. I think they would simply do what I had stated before, is to infiltrate our party itself. If they can't win, infiltrate us, take a break, break us apart, get us to start fighting at each other next. And when Trump is gone, we'll be waiting for a new leader that they placed up.
Speaking of infiltration, what do you make of Elon Musk?
I feel like Elon started off with X with the right idea, but ended up getting compromised by the advertisers, that the same people he told to go F themselves. I think they ended up compromising him shortly after.
Elaborate.
Well, I'm saying that just because. I mean, how do you be the richest man in the world? You tell advertisers to go F themselves. And next thing you know, you go down to Auschwitz, and I get demonetized the same day, along with a lot of different accounts for some random reason. And you address it on the Ben Shapiro show, and he also went down to Israel, which it's terrible what happened. Free all the hostages, of course. But it's very strange to me that he was saying that there was a problem with the ADL. There's a problem with Media Matters, which is majority Muslim. And he goes down to these Muslim countries to promote the ideologies of them while demonetizing individuals and do a heavy amount of censoring for a specific group of people. That's compromisation.
Well, that's me. I'm not anti-Israel. But then they attach to being pro-Israel all the stuff I don't agree with.
Yes.
And it's like, I'm not even thinking about Israel.
Mm-hmm.
Why am I supposed to just live my whole life obsessed with this?
They want Americans to fight on other battles and fight in other wars when, from what I've known, Germany and America has given Israel reparations. As of today, we've received zero white Americans and black from Israel. And I don't think that's anti-Semitic for me to question. When is it time?
No, I mean, it's simple. Israel, I'm not even against Israel, but I have nothing to do with it.
Yeah.
I'm sick of hearing about you. You don't own me.
Yeah, agreed. Yeah, it's just America first. That's where we were originally, focused on our country and our country only. It's the problem with America. I see most of the vision. We start caring about the diplomatics and the problem, the policies of other nations. I feel like our country would be a lot better if we just focus on America and stay talking about America.
Dom Luker, stay right there. Let's come back. You sent me, usually I ask guests for talking points or videos. They give me nothing. You did your homework. You sent me a bunch of videos. Good God.
Thank you.
So let's just try to get to this when we come back. And I want to invite you back very, very soon as well. We're going to go a little bit in the next hour so we get more time. Stay with us, and we'll talk about where people find you. You're on X at DOM_LUCRE.
Since that Democrats have been trying to rally black civilians all around America to believe in propaganda that taking away the guns somehow protect us. But it was also the Democratic Party that started the KKK. And I say that to say this, that Dr. King, when his house was first hit with the firebombing, the first thing he did was apply for a gun permit. It was denied by the authorities, which was also liberal. Robert F. Williams, he actually had an NRA charter and was the president of the entire group. And it's stated on multiple documents that he did, I mean, partnered with the NRA solely for the reason to combat Democratic KKK. So what was then is now. If they were allowed to take away our guns, it would be the hoods that would be affected the most. Somehow they've considered, well, convinced black Americans to believe that they aren't pro-2A. If you look at any of our rap videos, anything with our culture, we might not have a picture with us hunting beside a deer, but we have pictures with us with extendos, you know, and suppressors on our weapons. That's American as it get. So somehow they've got people to believe in the propaganda that that's not who they truly are. It's very unfortunate. I even see with the recent school shooting down here in Nashville that our congressmen down here, they politicized it and they made it. They didn't make it about what it was really about. Unfortunately, it was about a transgender that was, you know, mentally unstable and unfortunately just wasn't satisfied with being a former student at school and took it out on those students. Somehow they made it about the gun. The thing that's strange, I see a lot of people, they like to post about Mar-a-Lago and show how there's no shootings at Mar-a-Lago. When President Trump is there, there's security settings, there's security booths, etc. I don't think there's anyone that's pro-2A is opposed to having armed security at the schools to make sure. Because proven that school shooters or any mass shooter, they look for a location that has guns restrictions. That way they have a longer time to, you know, rein their chaos. I feel like if we did have armed security, you would see a whole lot less shootings. Opposed to what people are saying to take away the guns, I feel like we need more, but to be in the right hands.
Dom Luker is our guest in studio at Dom_Luker, L-U-C-R-E. And I wanted to get him in studio because I had him on 4 or 5 months ago and it went viral. reached like 20 million people conservatively. And I notice he's under attack a lot by the left and the right. That's who I want to interview. Who's being lied about? Who's being demonized? Who's being called a fraud because they're scared of him? And he's articulate. He's doing a great job. But you were just mentioning that months ago. Here's an article today. Breaking. Police arrest trans student planning mass school shooting in Maryland. Of like the last 10 mass shooters, they've all been trans, 9 of them. Why are they covering that up? And these people are being taught they're victims, both men to women, but mainly men to women, women to men to women, all this stuff. What's really going on there?
I think the main reason is being covered up. And of course, it's to defend the transgender agenda. But more importantly, I think it's to prevent people from getting to the point of starting discussion in mental health, the mental health capacity of those that's performing these shootings. There is a correlation between mental health problems and people that somewhat choose to be a transgender. I just think that discussion is what's really being avoided, more importantly than anything. Because if you bring that discussion up, then now it'll lead to something else. Maybe it's just the mental health of those that's transgender, and then it leads to the mental health of those that's Democrats.
I've got a Godfather clip I'm going to play in a moment. I'm not going to play the whole 6-minute clip, but part of it, because The Godfather is one of the most famous movies ever made, and it's based on real historical figures. They changed the names. And so we're told pay reparations to black people for white people being bad, even though 2% owned slaves. Most white people's ancestors moved here after slavery was abolished. You can't do that. You can't blame me for what, even if I had a great-grandfather, which didn't, did that. But the CIA is a current agency that has been declassified, created the crack formula, shipped the drugs in. I've interviewed Free Ricky Ross. I've interviewed the reporters that later got murdered, that exposed it all. And so my issue is the very group that did all this is trying to create racial division. We need to talk about reparations to the American people by getting rid of the deep state and the corporations that were funding him to do that. I'd be really happy to do that.
Yeah, and it would make sense. The first slave owner and the word slave itself, it derives from Slavic. That's not black people. Slavic people aren't black. The word slave came from Slavic. And in America, a lot of black owners had slaves. The first slave owner was a black man, Anthony B.A. Anthony Johnson. He was the first black slave owner in America, and the first slave owner, because he had 3 indentured servants. 2 of them were white and 1 of them was black. And he argued with Congress, since the black man owed a debt that he made up, that he still had a right to own them. And they approved it. That was the start of slavery in America through a black man. And white slaves were cheaper than black.
But it's still not legitimizing slavery. It's wrong. But the point is, you know the history.
Yeah, I know the history, and it's simply.
I mean, most Roman slaves were not African; they were German.
Yeah, it's just business. It's no different than us having, how good your 18-wheeler is compared to that, or just your farm equipment, or your plow, or your hose. It was just a business, and white slaves were cheaper. If you look back at the scholars back then, they were saying how white slaves couldn't even hold the dumbbells or the bales of hay, or a last out in the sun as much as blacks. So the blacks cost it more. And it also fights the propaganda narrative that there was a massive majority of blacks being enslaved. They couldn't even.
You ought to make a documentary, because I've thought about that. And not lessening black slavery was terrible.
Yeah.
Transatlantic was terrible. But if you go back, Germany didn't, Austro-Hungarian Empire until 1860 free the slaves. Same thing in Russia. They were white slaves. They owned them.
Yes.
Anybody can type in Russia frees the serfs, which means slave. Mm-hmm. The point is that this is going on everywhere.
Yes. It's completely business, and they've just made it seem like it was an American problem. We're the first to free cattle slavery. But it was
I'm not giving America a pass. I'm just saying if everybody else is doing it,
yeah.
How come we're only taught about America? Why is that happening?
It's only happening because if you can get people to hate their country, they would feel like there needs a solution. Now, if it needs a solution, you're going to get that solution from the same people that told you to hate it.
Wow. Take the movie. I don't know if you've seen it yet, Civil War. Have you seen it?
Haven't seen it yet, but everyone's pushing it.
It's Trump at the end. They go kill him.
Mm.
And okay. The black lady kills him, and all the guys they're fighting are white. They say it's not political, but you watch it. it's all there. What are they trying to do there?
I guess they're trying to do some predictive programming, just in case if there was an assassination attempt of President Trump. It's just a predictive program, make it a lot easier for people to accept.
Keep going. I mean,
we've seen predictive programming a couple of times. We'll see certain things that happen, and not to get into 9/11, but we've seen predictive programming through several different means of media.
Well, cover whatever you want, but they did predict 9/11.
Yeah, it's been through several forms of media, just of Twin Towers falling, from cartoons all the way down to books to movies. And yet we see it could be a massive coincidence, but we typically do see this type of predictive programming that pushes anarchy. It starts to be a little bit validated sooner. A recent example is actually The Boys. The Boys TV show that was on Amazon, they had Homelander portray as Trump. And it shows how all hell breaks loose the more he got love. And we started to see that about 2022 and up of all the drama that started to stir up when they saw that Trump started to gain the people.
Why do you think they're so scared of Trump?
Oh, man. They're scared of Trump because he's the first person that the people are willing to listen to over their government. I don't believe we've ever had someone that we trust more than our government. And that's dangerous itself. But he's seems as if he's earned that position. He's trusted more than America.
He definitely wants prosperity for everybody.
It does, yes. Yes, and I think that's another problem because if the people get prosperity, then the elites get less.
Exactly. Well, that's what he found with China. He said, I found the communist Chinese get less money than a few middlemen that are robbing the Chinese and the Americans. He said, let's just get rid of them. China will make more, we'll make more, get rid of them.
Oh, wow. Yeah. It's completely what's going on here. It's greed. It's greed. It's greed. It's years and years of generational greed. They don't need any more money, but they absolutely
I was about to say, Soros can't even spend all that money.
He can't at all. But the things that they're spending it on isn't the typical things that a man can buy. They're buying
politics and power. But the globalists aren't that smart, whether it's Bill Gates or whether it's Soros or Zuckerberg. They admit they're building giant underground bunkers. Mm-hmm. So they steal all this money and don't even have a world to spend it. That's not smart.
It's not smart. It's not smart at all, but I guess it just shows that it's about the power more so than the peace. The power is more. I think they would rather rule the world that's on fire than to not be a ruler in a world that has peace.
Remember Henry Ford? He wasn't perfect, but he said, I'm going to pay my employees triple what other manufacturers do in Detroit when it was the center because I want them to buy my car, which was smart. The money went right back to him, but it built the economy.
Yes.
So he got richer. They got richer.
Sounds like the stimulus check. What happened with the stimulus? It went right back to the economy. A lot of people were complaining about the stimulus, but I would see a majority of people spending it on TV, spending it on vacation, spending it on going to Miami. They weren't spending it right, but that money went right back to the government.
Well, it's better than spending it on Ukraine.
Yeah, agreed. But it'll go there regardless.
What do you make of Mike Johnson, man? He really has turned out to be bad. He's
just disappointed along with
it was $60 billion last week. Now it's $100 billion this week.
I'm disappointed.
Nothing for America.
Nothing at all. I'm disappointed, but at the same time, I hope the people are paying attention to what happens when you take that position of power, that specific seat. I don't believe he has much of a choice. I mean, come on, this man has optics as we all do. He's seen the type of backlash that other congressmen have gotten. He's seen what Mitch McConnell will get. He knows what the people want, and yet he can't do it. I mean, it's just not logical unless he's unable to do it.
But they don't give $1 billion for us. They give $100 billion for Israel and Ukraine, nothing for us.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Because we don't stand up, folks. We fight with each other and don't know the issues. If you were like Dom or myself, and I'm not, most listeners are, but if the general public knew how it worked, we would have a seat at the table.
Yeah.
It's our money anyways.
That's just the whole thing. But if they can just alienate people that know the truth, then they can, slow down the effects of it actually waving through. Because one thing about truth is supreme and it's absolute. It doesn't matter who tells it. It will seep into the hearts and the minds of many.
I've been asking a lot of questions. We can go on for hours. But instead of me asking questions, what do you want to go with next? I want to play that Godfather clip I mentioned. But you're spitting some real knowledge here. That's why they're afraid of you.
Yeah, I do feel like I've been getting targeted. Like I said, my first time.
Don't feel like it. I've been watching it.
Thank you.
I follow you some, and I'm not even looking for it. I see the attacks everywhere.
And I tell you, it's like entering the Matrix or almost like exiting the Matrix because you wouldn't think it would be this way.
No, that's it. You're exiting. You took the red pill. You're exiting, and now they're after you.
Yes, that's exactly what's happening. I was just an onlooker. I never had these problems. I never had swatting attempts. I never had phone calls to my family offering $5,000 for information on me. I've never had
That's what they do.
Yeah, I've never
wait had till it's 50 grand.
Oh, wow. So I'm only worth five right now.
It's 50 on me.
Yeah, that's crazy.
And luckily, I'm so boring. I'm going to go home tonight and cook a hamburger and watch TV. But
oh,
yeah.
Oh, God. Yeah, they got me for five. But
don't feel bad. At least you're on the list.
Yeah, it's seeming that. But I didn't expect it to be so quick. And it more so shows this. I said, well, they don't touch things that doesn't have effect. Like, they don't touch Harry Potter. They don't touch the Lord of the Rings book. But the Bible has been changed more than any other book. That tells me it has importance. It tells me it has truth. They're touching people that are bringing out truth. They won't touch the clowns. They'll allow these rappers and they'll allow for, the OnlyFans girls or whatever to lead the youth, to lead the people astray. None of them ever have to go any of these problems. None of these people ever have to go through demonetizations or possibly getting kicked out or have to worry about security issues. But they are the people that's doing the most damage to society.
That's right. Andrew Tate did some stuff he did that was wild, but he only got attacked once he started doing the right thing.
Only got attacked once he started leading people outside of the propaganda. That's the truth. He only got attacked as soon as he started.
Keep going. Don't let me interrupt. Keep going.
And it's not about the person. It's about the message. I entered this and they could understand. They say, well, we got this black guy that doesn't look like a regular conservative, but yet conservatives accept him. Well, me simply existing in space validates that these conservatives aren't racist. It's not racism. No, there isn't no racism in conservatism.
I can tell you conservatives on average do not look at what color you are. They look at your ideology.
And my proof, the growth of my brand is proof of it. If there was racism in this party, I wouldn't have grown as fast as I am. I wouldn't get 1.8 to 2.1 billion impressions every 28 days. So it's out of acceptance, and it's out of a search for truth and knowledge. Like I said, I'm somewhat new, and I'm experiencing these massive changes in life. It's mind-blowing, and it just shows me that I'm not the target. It's the people I'm speaking to.
That's a better way than saying it. Trump always says, they're not trying to get me there. Get through me to get to you.
That's definitely the truth. It's not about me. It's about the people that's taking
it. So you're talking about black Americans. What's like 40% now are supporting Trump? It was 10%.
Yeah.
What's the system going to do with that?
Man. The only thing I think they could do is to replace us. I can't lie. That's the only thing I could think that would make sense. And we're seeing somewhat of it in the border. They even have these offices called the Offices of New Americans. Like you said, they tell us right in our face what they're doing. So what are they going to do with the old Americans if they got these Offices of New Americans in all these sanctuary cities? In every sanctuary city, we have something called the Office of New American. And they're deep in Chicago. And what we see in New York, Roosevelt Hotel is housing immigrants. And we see all the way down in Chicago from the from Marriott's. They're housing immigrants there, and they're giving them the benefits that black Americans used to have, and they're pushing them also out a lot of their hoods. In California, in South Central specifically, they predict by 2040 that almost all the hoods there that are black are going to be Hispanic.
And it's nothing against Hispanics. They're being used as a pawn.
This is we were.
Because it's a pawn deal.
Yeah, that's all we are. We're all a game.
Speaking of pawns, folks, it is a fact the CIA, way before cocaine in the 80s, and Freeway Ricky Ross and all the guests we've had on, targeted prostitution, drug dealing, everything in the black community. That was where white people, I never did it, but I've read that, you went there to get it. Actually, it's true. I said that, but I think when I was like 15 years old, no one would sell us beer anywhere in Dallas or surrounding counties. But if we went to the black communities, South Dallas, they would sell us the beer. And my buddies, they'd sell them marijuana. Mm-hmm. Again, that's not the black people that are bad. Why was it protected that I could go buy beer when I was 15 with my buddies that were 16 and someone of marijuana they were getting? I'm not a big marijuana guy, but the point was because that was the zone where it was accepted. Here's a clip from the original Godfather talking about it.
Don Bassini, I want to thank you for helping me organize this meeting here today. And also the other heads of the five families. New York, New Jersey. Carmine Cuneo from the Bronx and Brooklyn. Philip Tattaglia from Staten Island. We have with us Victor Strachey and all the other associates who came as far as from California, Kansas City, and all the other territories of the country. Thank you. How do things ever get so far? I don't know. We're so unfortunate, so unnecessary. Natalia lost a son. I lost a son. We're quits. And if Tattaglia agrees, then I'm willing to let things go on the way they were before.
We are all grateful to Don Corleone for calling this meeting. We all know him as a man of his word. A modest man, he'll always listen to reason.
Yes, Don Barzini. He's too modest. He had all the judges and politicians in his pocket. He refused to share them.
When did I ever refuse an accommodation? All of you know me here. When did I ever refuse? Except one time. And why? Because I believe this drug business is going to destroy us in the years to come. I mean, it's not like gambling or liquor, even women, which is something that most people want nowadays, and it's forbidden to them by the bets and bounty of the church. Even the police departments that have helped us in the past with gambling and other things are going to refuse to help us when it comes to narcotics. And I believed that then. And I believe that now.
Times have changed. It's not like the old days, where we can do anything we want. A refusal is not the act of a friend. If Don Corleone had all the judges and the politicians in New York, then he must share them. All it others use them. He must let us draw the water from the well. Certainly he can present a bill for such services. After all, we are not communists.
I also don't believe in drugs. For years, I paid my people extra so they wouldn't do that kind of business. Somebody comes to them and says, I have powders. If you put up $3,000-$4,000 investment, we can make $50,000 distributing. So they can't resist. I want to control it as a business, to keep it respectable. I don't want it near schools. I don't want it sold to children. That's an infamia. In my city, we would keep the traffic in the dark, people to call it. They're animals anyway, so let them lose their souls.
All right, let's stop right there. I wanted to play that because in the most famous movie probably ever made, they admit what is actually reality. And so you want to talk about reparations, folks. Black Americans have been targeted by the criminal networks and by the CIA to dump all the crime in their neighborhoods. And now with the police being defunded, it's been done to them. So I want black people and everybody else to know what's been done to everybody and where the real threat is and what's really going on. And now we have the manifesto, the man that set himself on fire an hour and a half ago, Max, how do you pronounce his name? Azzarello. And he says there's a cryptocurrency scam. The world government's coming in. Trump is working with Biden and that he's there to draw attention to this massive fraud. They're getting ready to plunge the world economy and take over. And he apologizes for the pain, but says he's done this to draw attention to this. I don't know if he's right about that, but this is a big deal. Dom Luker, your take on the Godfather clip and this news.
Well, the Godfather clip, I'll say, is completely accurate. As you stated, it's very eye-opening just to see that they, like we were stating, what they put in Hollywood is real life. It's more so a documentary than it is a movie, it seems. For the individual, I'm kind of at a loss of words. I didn't expect that to be the statement that he had to say that, alluding to President Trump working with Biden and the economy crashing.
I'm not saying I don't trust Trump. I think, but man, they might be using Trump too for that.
You never know. I guess you just have to wait and see with time. But that's crazy for him to say that. My first question would be at least what his credentials are, his credibility is on the statement. I mean, that's a pretty large statement he made.
Yeah, I just digested it during the 3 minutes we watched that clip. We're posting it on my Real Alex Jones. Keep going.
But that's pretty strange because now, oh, wow, that leads a pretty interesting discussion because liberals can't say he's some retarded Trumper. Trump supporters can't say he's a dumb leftist. So
he's going after the banks.
Yeah, he's going after the banks. That's pretty interesting. It doesn't give us the typical narratives for us to fight each other with. It seems like he's more so on unity, telling the people that both of their leaders could be compromised.
And that's what they don't want us doing is free thinking.
Yeah, free thinking. Regardless of anyone that comes in front of the camera, the main goal will always be the people and to prevent the people from gathering alone. I mean, America was even built from people drinking in taverns. This entire country was started from men and women negotiating in taverns, complaining about King George. So if an entire nation, the greatest nation in the world, can be started just from laughing, joking, and hollygagging in the taverns of Britain, imagine what we can do if we get to talking now.
Well, back then, they didn't have TV telling what to think. They were sitting around talking. Yeah.
They were talking, and they were going off their own experiences. And that's what the TV is here for, is to tell our vision. It's to tell the vision that they want us to know, because they don't want us to see. They don't want us to use our own vision to see what's in front of us. But we turn that TV on, that's our verification.
What do you think the Joe Biden controllers are thinking right now? Because they know they've lost. I mean, they've lost control. They haven't lost completely, but they've lost control, in my view.
I think they're panicking. I think they're panicking greatly. I don't think they've been this down bad since they made the Madam Hillary magazine, where they were predicting Hillary Clinton to be president.
Yeah, that's hanging on the wall. Will you guys go grab that, the Madam Hillary sign? I'd love to show that. They printed 250,000 of those 2 days before, thinking she was invincible.
I believe that they ain't have a meltdown since that, since they found out it wasn't going to work with Hillary, because they were banking on people to just be blind. And I think COVID, I keep hearing this from so many people. Oh, COVID woke me up. COVID woke me up. COVID woke me up. So I feel like just them forcing the people in the house is kind of put people back in that tavern mentality of finding out information. They weren't necessarily on the TVs when they were in COVID. We saw more use on the internet, more use on the internet, more use on these social media platforms.
They thought they would push us into their propaganda. Yes. And the opposite.
And I believe the exact opposite. It went to the creators. The power went to the creators. It went right back to the people. The pendulum swung right back to the people.
Well, I wish this guy that torched himself would have simply, thank you, I wish he would have simply spoke out or asked me on my show. I wish he wouldn't have killed himself. Dom Luker, here's what you mentioned. Here's the famous, this is an actual magazine right here. This was on the newsstand in Austin. We got this the day of the election. Madam President, how she won.
Yes, that's so funny. They were banking on it. And it just goes to show that the things that appear natural for us, the people, the peasants, the pawns, they've already had that plan set down for the last 4 or 5 years, what they're going to implement and introduce to us. I mean, it was already planned because, let's be honest, it isn't cheap to push that many copies, and it isn't cheap to put your entire reputation.
Hold that up. I want to get a shot of you holding that. Look, her path to White House victory. Look at that. That's aiming right there. This camera right there. Yeah, there you go. Wow. What did you, I mean, talk about a witch.
Yeah, and it just goes to show that, yeah, they plan out everything, but I think it's a little motivating to say as well, just to show how much they banked in on getting their way, and it didn't work. So it does.
Yeah, they're not all powerful.
Yeah, and that's what's most important. They're not all that powerful. I think
Dom Luker, stay there. Hour number 4 straight ahead. We'll do 15 or more minutes. Great to have him in studio, and then Jay Dyer takes over. Dom Luker is our guest. Follow him on X at Dom_Luker, LUCRE. All right, Dom, we got about 15 minutes left. You see the great Jay Dyer is sitting down, ready to take over here in a few minutes. In 1 hour, Owen Schroyer, but keep laying truth bombs on us.
Yes, I just definitely believe that we're entering an era where what was considered conspiracy, people are starting to request sources and see what even led to people believing this conspiracy. The age of Aquarius, we really are in the age of truth, more so now than ever, in my opinion, from the things I'm seeing around me. It's not just the search for knowledge, it's the people that's searching for it. You would typically see a specific type of people that would search for knowledge in the past by a specific age range. Now there's really no limit. I can't really give you a demographic for the people that's looking for truth. In the past, it could be around maybe the 30s to 40s to males generally, and then, you know, have your women a little bit earlier than the men. But now we're seeing 17-year-olds, 15-year-olds, 14-year-olds talking about George Soros, something I haven't seen in my lifetime. I believe that people like you, the pioneers, are winning the truth war. But it's very motivating for just me to come in and see it because, you know, we have so many leaders that came in and took the hits. And we just see now that people like me can't exist without, I do get some fire, but nowhere near as much as maybe Mr. Jones had in the past. And it just goes to show that it isn't about what he was saying, is who he was saying it to and who was listening. If Alex Jones didn't exist, I wouldn't be here. And that's what they're trying to prevent. They're trying to prevent me from leading to another Dom. And they're trying to prevent him from leading to another replacement of me. It's not about us. It's about us preventing us from getting you from getting active.
You got it, though. I've always known instinctively from God, my job is not to make me the biggest thing. It's to trigger other great leaders from every race, color, and creed. And it's happening. That's what scares them, is that chain reaction.
Chain reaction, I believe, yeah. It's a revolution. A revolution isn't just one person. It's the men behind them that's willing to also pick up that sword and that flame. And that's what they fear. They fear the age of revolution. They fear the American spirit from being reborn. The American spirit is a revolutionary spirit. And they're trying to declassify us. They're trying to submit us.
Exactly. It's not perfect, but it's revolutionary. And that's why they fear it.
Yes.
Damn right. Of course, no revolution is perfect. But are you for the revolution or are you for the stagnant tyranny?
And anyone for the revolution, the tyranny will come for. Tyranny comes for anyone for the revolution. And it doesn't mean that people are pushing destruction and chaos and madness. That's not what a revolution means. It means a reform. It means a rebirth of what we currently have that doesn't work for the people. It doesn't mean it ends in blood. No. Most of the time, they don't. Most of the time, it's of the mind.
Well, the globalists want to trigger a false revolution of blood.
Yeah, I would agree that. They try to push a race war in America because we're at the point we don't have much else. We don't have much else. They don't have their propaganda to keep us busy as they did. So they can say, well, just look at, they hate the man to your left and hate the man to your right and don't worry about us. So right now, they're just trying to push this whole race war to civil war in America. I think that's one thing that if there's anything we can see coming to this election is a major push for civil war in this country is what I think.
Huge push.
I think we'll be seeing that. I mean, I think that'll be coming very heavy in the summer.
And like you said, they'll use a few things. Police aren't perfect by any means, but they'll use a few things blown up out of proportion. Old events, boom. You're already seeing it. I'm seeing CNN like 10 years ago, a white racist did this. I'm like, okay, it's wrong, but why are you pushing that now?
Yeah, exactly. I just seen not too long ago with New York Post or Newsweek, they were posting about, like I said, someone that passed in 2022 from him saying he couldn't believe from police custody. Is it wrong? Well, if I get the facts about it and it's wrong, then it's wrong. But what's even worse is not telling that man's story when it happened. How could you sit there and let a man die? This is the thing people got to start understanding, how cruel and heartless the media and the powers that be are. You will sit there and allow a man to die screaming for help, but you put that on hold until election season. That just shows how valuable we are to them. It doesn't really matter about our plights. It just matters about when we send it out. And if they don't have no plight for that current moment, they will bring back the old one. They will bring back and resurface stories if it just doesn't validate the current reality we're living in. And we're seeing that. Like you said, the old stories that are coming up, because as of right now, they are pushing a lot of race bait and they are pushing a lot of civil war, but I would believe it's failing. The fact they have to go back to old news stories. There isn't new race bait. There aren't these white supremacists gunning down black children, and there aren't these black children that's targeting these white people and these white kids and gunning them down. They don't have no recent stories.
Dom Luker, final segment out of the great Jay Dyer, who's suiting up. You can punch him up. He's coming in. He's ready to go. You got a few minutes, Jay. We're going to go to you. Jay Dyer is an expert on the New World Order, straight ahead, and then Owen in 1 hour. Stay with us. Well, I really like Dom Luker. I've been watching him for a few years on X. He's exploded, reaches tens of millions a day. He's saying nothing but truth here, and that's why he's under attack. Dom, Jay Dyer is going to take over. You were so nice to come to Austin. You were on the American Journal with Harrison Smith yesterday. You were on with Owen. You're flying back to, where do you live?
Nashville, Tennessee.
That's a good place. Okay. So you got the floor the next 10 minutes. What, you, preach it, people. You're hosting the Alex Jones Show right now. Then I'll hand the baton to the great Jay Dyer. What do you want to say to folks?
I'll say to the people that's listening and watching right now live that, as you, a lot of them seen, they watch my growth from day one and watch me get to this position to even be with the legendary Alex Jones. And I didn't get here this fast if I was to tell lies. You know, it's a lot of truth that's out here. If you look at my reports and you see that I'll cite and date it, it doesn't mean that it's what I'm saying. It's what someone else has said. If I put on there that Hillary Clinton has sacrificed children, that's not my own words. I will simply say that this person posted on this day that she did. It's about the approach and it's about the words that you use. You got to make sure that you pay attention to the context that you're putting out there. They target a lot of people by the words that we put out. We have to be very careful with the words that we say, and we have to be very careful with our predictions. They'll use that to take away your credibility. In terms of my attack, the only thing they've been coming for is my credibility. I don't get paid for my post on X. I don't get pushed by the major medias. I don't even get pushed by the largest influencers on X or even in the conservative party. No congressman, no senator, none of these people, hell, not even council members are really pushing my content. But yet it is outperforming almost every other profile on that platform because the information is true. You got to believe in yourself. You got to believe in your brand and you got to believe in what you're pushing. We're in an era where the truth is reigning supreme, and thereafter anyone else that is not afraid to speak it. They have less power the more of us there are. So you need to speak. You should speak. If more of us are speaking, they can't get all of us at once. It might have started with Alex Jones and then it transitions to me, but I'm speaking to the next me. I'm speaking to my replacement. I'm speaking to the individual that's watching right now and want to be sitting at this same seat. I'm talking to them, and I know you're going to get here, but you have to be bold, you have to be courageous, and you have to be willing to do your research. Because if you don't, they're going to get you, and they're going to label this entire movement behind your false information. So you have to first get into it, and you have to take a great responsibility of what you're putting out. You have the perception of entire party after, well, behind you. Right now in Black America, we see majority of our people fighting back against the propaganda. We see majority of our people fighting back against the hip-hop influence that we have. And right now in hip-hop, we see the females are being targeted and the females are being manipulated to control the youth and control the males because they're afraid of men speaking. They're trying to control the mindset of the men, and they want to keep us docile and to keep us to submit. The goal isn't to wake up the world necessarily, but really just to wake up America, because once America is woke, the entire world will follow. The greatest fear that I would say that going into 2024 is the people not listening. The people not listening, and then more importantly, the people not willing to add in, to give out their own input, to give out their own words, to make their own speeches, because they don't want to just silence us. They want to silence you. They want to prevent you from ever speaking because they don't know what you know. And the thing is, a lot of people are unaware what they know and how important it is. I stress so much how important the people are. If it's anything that I learned doing this, it's that, God, the people are so important. And I'm not just saying that to make no one feel good. You truly are the target. They aren't after us. They're after you believing what is being pushed out. They put billions and billions of dollars behind Hollywood and the music industry and almost any industry that we do see on television just to control the hearts and the minds and the souls of Americans. The goal is to get you to believe in what they're pushing and to push it yourself. If the people are pushing the news, that's what validated, not me, not Alex, not NBC, not CNN, not Trump, not Biden. We can post as many things as we want to. We can say as much as we want, but it's about the people that believe it. It's about the people that push it. It's about the people that validate it. The people are the truth.
And I'm telling the crew, take this clip you just said, put it up front in the whole interview. You're damn right. We're the tail, the people are the dog. They got to realize how much power they've got.
Yes, they have to. And I think that's what they've mainly done. And I look back, I was born in 94, so I wasn't able to experience it. But I see through the hippie era, it seems like that they knew they had the power. Until, I don't know what happened with the psychedelics. I know the CIA infiltrated the hippie movement too. But the whole free peace and things like that, the people saw how powerful they were with just the way they were protesting. That was the era of protesting. They knew they had power. They saw how they were affecting markets. They saw how they were able to shut down streets and businesses. And somehow, we've gone astray from that.
Well, they joined the power structure, which is stagnant and out of control.
Definitely, yeah. You can see it. They've pushed the people. The people, and even with the parties, the Democrat Party would have been more so recognized with the hippies, but now you're seeing the Democrats are the most pro-government now. The absolute most pro-government. And the people, like I said, are the strongest, because liberals wouldn't be this powerful if we didn't even have council culture from conservatives first. Now, our council culture was nowhere near as strong as liberal council culture, but we did it. We canceled hip hop in the past, NWA. We canceled Harry Potter in the past. We canceled GTA. We canceled a lot of things for the nuclear family. Conservatives had a lot of push in the 90s, all the way down to our television shows from Fresh Prince of Bel-Air or Good Times. They constantly spoke on the dangers of drug use. They spoke on the dangers of single family homes. They spoke on the dangers of gang banging. And as time progressed, we see that them start to focus on more liberal ideologies such as homosexuality, socialism, and just a lot of propaganda that has replaced our media. In the past, when conservatives had the power and we began canceling our peers, they started being seen as the victims. And one thing about America, America always fights for the underdog. And we see the pendulum has swung. We see that liberals gained the power of being those that be able to counsel. And they went twice as hard, twice as fast. So conservatives are yet again the victims. Conservatives are yet again the revolutionaries. And the country is leaning towards those that are being assaulted, those that are being targeted. When you take someone's like Alex Jones' books out of Barnes & Noble, or you create these viral videos and set them on fire, you only are creating more buyers. And we're just seeing a return of form, of America returning back to its conservative values.
Amazing. Dom Lucker, thank you so much. At D-O-M underscore L-U-C-R-E. Thank you for coming to town. We'll talk to you again soon. Where do people find you, on X and where else?
On X, Instagram, YouTube, Facebook at Dom Lucker, D-O-M underscore L-U-C-R-E. It's a pleasure. Thank you for having me, Mr.
God bless you, brother.
God bless you.
Good to have you here. Thanks for coming to town. I'm flattered. All right. The great Jay Dyer. We're skipping the breaks. Gets more time. Jay Dyer takes over now.
Thank you, Alex. Yeah, glad to be here on the fourth hour of the Alex Jones Show. It's always a pleasure, always an honor. Today, I want to talk about a topic that you've heard covered, but we don't often hear people with academic expertise covering this topic. I mean, I think to a degree, I have that. But what about the issue of transhumanism as an academic discipline, as a study? Today, I have one of my good buddies as the guest with me. His name is David Patrick Harry. You can find him on Twitter under that, as well as on YouTube under Church of the Eternal Logos. And David, I want to talk to you about transhumanism because this is a subject that you know very well. I think you're studying this at the academic level. Before we get into it, I'm going to let you give your take on it. What I understand is kind of an agenda that we have been under for many decades. We can go back to people like H.G. Wells, who wrote a book called The New World Order, The Open Conspiracy, Bertrand Russell, other people in those circles. They said they wanted to go back to Plato, utilize Plato's philosophy of techne, and make it into a technocracy, a world government ruled not by nation states, not by firewalls of the family and borders, but rather a global federation of world citizens where nobody has identity other than what the system gives you ultimately by some sort of matrix, some sort of thing to be plugged into. And as we progress up into the future, beyond the designs of people 100 plus years ago, we see books like Between Two Ages by Brzezinski, outlining this world government. We see it with, that's run by technocracy. The book is called The Technotronic Era. We see people like Jacques Attali, the Kissinger of France, writing books about transhumanists as the tip of the spear of the revolution. We find people like Klaus writing books like The Fourth Industrial Revolution, where he talks about how we're going to be linked into Skynet. We see his understudy, Noah Yuval Harari, basically saying the same type of stuff. What is transhumanism? Does it have a predecessor in the ancient Gnostic cults and mystery religions? And is it kind of ultimately something Gnostic?
Yeah, thanks for having me, Jay. I really appreciate the opportunity. And this is a topic that I've been really concerned with and is the primary focus of my academic research. And as you highlighted, you know, we have a lot of conversation, and you do incredible work talking about many of the globalist elite books and the technocracy and how transhumanism fits into that. But what I think most people aren't aware of is that the sort of philosophical presuppositions that give and undergird transhumanist philosophy in the contemporary period actually have pretty old roots. And I would argue that you can look back to early philosophers like John Scotus Origena. He was an Irish Neoplatonic Christian, deemed heretic by the church, but he was considered one of the leading philosophers of the Carolingian era. And in the 800s, he talked about this new concept of the useful arts as redeeming the abilities that were lost to Adam due to the fall. And so what's interesting, and a handful of scholars have made this argument, and I actually agree with it, that transhumanism and transhumanist philosophy actually emerges out of heretical belief systems within Christianity, specifically Western Christianity. And that from the scholastic period forward, this idea that technology and technological or mechanical means are going to divinize man and regain total universal knowledge over nature, which they believed Adam had before the fall, is therefore us moving back to the New Jerusalem. And this is generally characterized as a millenarian perspective as opposed to a more traditional Christian perspective would be more of an apocalyptic, and that would ebb and flow. There'd be good and bad periods throughout history, but ultimately the eschatological vision of traditional Christianity is that things are going to get worse in one sense or another, where many of these heretical views that we can see move through the scholastic period through people like Giacomo Fiore, and I'll speak a little bit more about that in just a few, about why he is so influential. Roger Bacon, moving into people like Paracelsus, the alchemist, Henry Cornelius Agrippa, moving into somebody like Francis Bacon, who also wrote a book called The New Atlantis. And after the Reformation period, there is this energy that was really characterizing Protestant Northern European ideas that was sort of blending Hermetic ideas, esoteric, Western esoteric ideals with Protestant Christianity, and undergirded by this belief in technological progress, which ultimately is going to lead towards the transcendence of man and go to the New Jerusalem. And so much of the 16th century and the 17th century was characterized by this Enlightenment utopian thinking that we were going to redeem ourselves through technology. And I would argue, and even Nick Bostrom, we'll talk a little bit about, he's one of the leading current philosophers of transhumanism. He has an article on the history of transhumanism, and he even highlights that many of the aspirations of transhumanism actually comes out of Western esoteric alchemy. But yeah, I think we could make a strong argument that it even emerges before that.
Yeah, I like the tie in there. I was going to bring up Hermeticism. There's a famous book by Dame Frances Yates on the Rosicrucian Enlightenment, and she highlights the beginning of that book, the philosophy of, say, John Dee, right, the first 007. Mm-hmm. John Dee was very interested in the notion of man achieving apotheosis through ritual magic. And a lot of the esoteric stuff that you're talking about that we think about today comes out of this tradition of Hermeticism, and even scientism itself actually has a lot of its origin in the Hermetic tradition of the 1500s, 1600s, 1700s. Many of the famous scientists were involved in these esoteric lodges where they could conduct alchemy. Newton was a famous alchemist. Most people don't know this. Right. And it ties in as well with the rise of Marxism and socialism, because a lot of the groups that you're talking about, Joachim of Fiore and his radical Franciscan philosophy, it was a very immanentizing of the eschaton. And that's just a fancy word for saying we can bring the kingdom of God into time and space through human works, create a kind of human kingdom of God. And later groups picked up on this idea. Thomas Münzer and the Münzer Rebellion was an earlier, mm-hmm. The next phase of a kind of socialism. And as we get up into the period of Marx himself has a very technocratic bent in his writings. He thinks that technology right. could be the key to the creation of what would, quote, liberate man and bring about the utopian state. We see this in other philosophers after Marx who also speak this way. And then we get into the technocrats, and they share this idea. But like you said, it goes back to the ancient world of the idea of creating an ideal world, an ideal government. But it also wants to transform man. And I think when we mention Gnosticism, yes. Why do you think they want to transform man? Is it something like out of the Garden of Eden, like the promise of that, you know, you can be like God, you can be your own God? It almost sounds like that.
Yeah, I would argue, again, coming at it as an Orthodox Christian, that it really is this sort of misinterpretation of Scripture, be it Genesis 3, but really many of the thinkers throughout history that I would highlight regarding this trajectory of transhumanist undergirded presuppositions all believe in this linear progress that technology and rational apprehension of nature is what's going to transcend man. And the traditional Christian understanding is the way that we unite with God is through a moral behavior, a moral living of our lives that reflects the teachings of Jesus Christ. And it's through that embodiment of the teachings of Christ and the uncreated energies as an Orthodox Christian that we become synergized by God. But this worldview is specifically about, you could argue it has Gnostic elements because of this emphasis on the rational apprehension of knowledge, which when we move into the 21st century with somebody like Yuval Noah Harari and his philosophy of dataism, which I would argue is a central core to transhumanist philosophy, he actually argues in favor of philosophy dataism, where the only thing that truly exists in the world is information. And therefore, the only thing that's important is the ability to process and cipher information. And he makes the claim towards the end of that book, Homo Deus, that we are just algorithms and everything that's living is an algorithm. And therefore, there is no real ontological distinction between a digital or computerly generated algorithm and us as biological entities. And the only thing that's important then is how much can we process. And therefore, if you are upgraded with hardware in your brain or essentially totally transcend human nature through transhumanism, that you are going to be at an ontologically a higher state than you could ever be as a human entity. And that really is Gnostic in the sense that, one, it's a transcendent of nature. For them, it's part of their post-evolutionary philosophy. But it's that focus on rational apprehension, I think, is something that can't be underappreciated, that it really stems out of spiritual ideas. And when we look at the 20th century with somebody like Arthur C. Clarke and his famous quote that any sufficiently advanced technology is indistinguishable from magic, you know, my research is really focused in the realm of new religious movements and Western esoteric traditions. And I would argue that transhumanism is a new religious movement. It sort of challenges the categories of what religion is, but it's built on many presuppositions, despite transhumanists now would say, oh, we're atheists, we're rationalists, we don't, you know, have any sort of spiritual worldview. But in fact, I would say that they do. And these are ancient roots. And Joachim of Fiore, as you mentioned, was an abbot who believed that there was these sort of three different ages that reflected the Trinity. There was the age of the Father, which was the Old Testament, the age of the Son, which was the incarnation of Christ. And then he believed, as most people do that in his life, then they entered into the age of the Holy Spirit. So he just happened to be at the precipice, and that this age of the Holy Spirit then was all about the regeneration of man back to the Edenic state, and that technology and knowledge are the ways in which that occurs. And when we look at somebody like Roger Bacon, who was also an English Franciscan friar, we see the exact same thing. And there's many legends regarding Roger Bacon. He was obviously considered an alchemist, but there's a big legend about his mechanical or necromantic brazen head that he was able to conjure, and that he could then ask the questions to this mechanical or necromantic head, and it would give him all sorts of responses. It was sort of an all-knowing entity. And it's like, well, that's in the 1300s, and we can already see a sort of precursor in what many people believe that AGI is going to be.
Yeah, the idea of a mimicked logic machine that mimics the human brain. This is the origins of modern computing. If you look at Leibniz in some of his writings, you know, the co-founder of calculus at the same time as Newton, he has essays where he talks about the possibility of building, on the basis of his kind of Neoplatonic philosophy, a machine that mimics the logic of the human mind, and it kind of sets the stage for the rise of the computer. I think the medieval Gollum mythology also plays into that. There is an overlap too with medieval Kabbalah and Hermeticism and scientism that emerges out of that as well. So there's a lot of strains that go together, absolutely. And one thing you talk about a lot in your videos, and you have a channel, Church of the Eternal Logos, over on YouTube, you talk a lot about boundaries, and that men and the masculine spirit is very interested in erecting and protecting boundaries. That's part of what it is to be a man. And I appreciate that, because this is overlooked today. I just did a stream kind of piggybacking your masculinity stream. And this relates to the transhumanist stuff, because transhumanism is really about going beyond all boundaries, and it ties into the trans agenda in terms of biology, because the idea that, when you're mentioning these esotericists, when we look at something like the image of Baphomet, we notice that it has both genders. And in some of the occult circles and traditions, there's this idea that to have both of the genders, or to be non-binary, to go beyond that, is to return to this original primal monadic state, which is not in any kind of division or differentiation. So, for example, to go from the original source primal monad state to male and female is somehow a fall into a lesser state of being. And they have an assumption, and you can actually read some of the esotericists and the occultists and the Crowleyans. They'll speak this well. They'll say, we need to get back to some kind of non-gendered supra state of beyond man and woman, or being both. That statue that they unveiled in one of the Nordic countries, where it was a man with genitalia having breasts feeding a baby, that is a form of the Baphomet imagery here. How does that relate to the transhumanist movement, though, and this idea of transcending boundaries?
Well, yeah, you highlight that transcendence of boundaries, or the dissolution of boundaries. Terence McKenna was famous for arguing that that's exactly what psychedelics do. And I would argue that much of, when we look at the agenda of the elites, the dissolution of national boundaries, the dissolution of boundaries between man and machine, the dissolution of boundaries between man and animal, the dissolution of boundaries between male and female, that these are actually attacks on the psyche. These are attacks on the reality that of God's creation. These are attacks on our ability to logically and rationally apprehend and process reality. And if you can't see what's in front of you and understand it, well, then you're going to be very malleable by powers that be to reinterpret the phenomenon that is occurring in front of your face. And I think that's something that we're seeing right now.
Yeah, human nature is believed to be plastic. There's no such thing as nature. There's the plasticity of man. And this goes back to H.G. Wells's Island of Dr. Moreau. He was actually way ahead of the curve in this idea, because his idea was that you can sort of turn man into whatever you want him to be, because he's sort of like putty, right? And so you can mold him into the future entity that you want to be. But this is interesting, because one of the flaws that I see here is the idea. Welcome back to the fourth hour of the Alex Jones Show. I'm your guest host, Jay Dyer of Jay's Analysis. I want to remind you that we have a new live event. We've been having a blast doing these live events all over. We'll be in Las Vegas June 22nd with our good buddy Jamie Kennedy from Scream, the Jamie Kennedy Experiment, an awesome comedian. We have a great time doing these six-hour events. They're not, it's not just stand-up. It's not just boring lectures. It's more like a party. I know my buddy David here has been to one of our events. It's a lot of fun. It's June 22nd in Las Vegas. Head on over to my Twitter page, Jay Dyer Twitter. You'll see at the top there is the post, and you can go over to the Eventbrite link and get your tickets right now, June 22nd in Las Vegas. We'll also have with us our buddy Isaac Weishaupt. You've seen him on the podcast with Sam Tripoli, Temple Hat, many, many times. So my wife, Jamie, will also be there with us. Six-hour event. Be sure and get your tickets now. There's limited seating. So we're talking about this dissolution of boundaries. We're talking about weird contradictions in the worldview of transhumanism. And before the break there, I was trying to get into the point of weird, this element of, on the one hand, we want no boundaries. However, all of reality in this quantification perspective is seen to be somehow information. Well, to have information requires setting some kind of boundaries. We have this piece of information, which is distinct from this piece of information. So having and knowing information requires boundaries. Yet at the same time, we're told that there are no boundaries and man must sort of step beyond all boundaries and somehow achieve his own divinity. And it's always based on weird fallacies, weird illogical contradictions. Klaus and Harari, for example, say that there's no such thing as consciousness. There's no such thing as the mind. However, we're going to upload the mind to the cloud. How are you going to upload something that doesn't exist? It makes no sense. Man is going to be God, of course, but man is meaningless muck from the pond scum of the ancient primordial world of the soup. So it's always a contradictory story and narrative. Yet they're selling us on this myth that technology will somehow make us into gods or Marvel Universe soy men, superheroes, right? What's what's the root of this in terms of what they really want? So we've talked about the ancient history, but what's the real goal of the transhumanists in your view?
Well, it depends on who you ask in regards to some of these contemporary philosophers. You know, if you look at one who is a co-founder of Humanity Plus, which is sort of the rebranding of the Transhumanist Association, the World Transhumanist Association, that was rebranded in the early 2000s as Humanity Plus by philosopher Nick Bostrom and David Peirce. And David Peirce describes himself as a negative utilitarian, and that philosophical worldview is interested in the elimination, or at least the limiting to the most significant extent, suffering. And so he is a vegan who promotes a hedonistic transhumanism, which is about the engineering, this is a direct quote, of paradise engineering. So he believes that this hedonistic transhumanism, what they're going to do through the technologies is engineer paradise. And in so doing, he goes so far as that he wants to redesign the total global ecosystem, I kid you not. And in his own writings, he would want to redesign predatory species so that they would no longer eat other animals and therefore eliminate suffering. And one of the ways in which he postulates we might be able to do that is through a brain implant. And so what would happen is when you experience suffering, this would be sort of transmutated into a sense of pleasure, but it would be the way he describes it is it would inform you that you would be suffering. It'd be a different type of stimulation, but therefore when you experience suffering, you wouldn't actually feel it. Well, from a Christian worldview, that is demonic. And we've talked about sort of providing everybody with their hedonistic desires and living in, you know, pod-like entities with their UBI, all their, you know, kibble and their bugs ready there to eat for them. And he's very much in favor of a utopian worldview like this, where you talk with other major transhumanist thinkers. You know, Max Moore is really kind of considered one of the premier philosophers and founders of contemporary transhumanism. And he owns the Alcor Life Extension Foundation in Scottsdale, Arizona, which is focused on cryogenics. And so they are currently freezing human bodies right before death. So this is a sort of assisted mediated death where they will you'll go there before you die. And he's actually recently on the Theo Von podcast talking about what they do at Alcor. And you have to obviously sign waivers. It's very expensive. And then they'll place your body in a form of liquid nitrogen, or you can just put your brain in there. So you have kind of two options. And it's been speculated. I don't know for sure. So somebody will have to fact check me. But Bill Gates and some of the elites have been very interested in cryogenics. And his wife, Natasha Vitamore, actually participated in an experiment at the University of Seville in Spain, where they were able to prove that there was no memory loss in multicellular organisms when they were cryonically frozen. So what they did is they froze neurons and tissues from a multicellular organism and then were able to unfreeze it, although it's a little bit more technical, because obviously if it was just frozen in the way that we think, something in the freezer, it would the water would be a major problem for the tissues and all this different stuff. So there's a different process for it, and they're very emphatic to explain this when everybody brings it up. But what they did prove is that the memory of something before could be maintained after it was sort of resuscitated. And so the whole point of Alcor Life Extension Foundation is for what they deem and what they even describe explicitly as a form of resurrection, and that people who pay for these services, that eventually at some point in the future, whether we're able to, in their opinion, upload our brains or our minds to a computer or be able to totally technologically augment the human entity, that they'll be able to revive somebody right on the brink of death before they're frozen, and they would be able to sort of transfer them to a new body. And this is something that they believe they're making headway in. And this is something that a lot of money is being pushed for. And when you look at their founders, it's many of the same global movers and shakers that you would suspect funding a lot of this research.
Yeah, it's just weird to me the way the thought process of a lot of these people is that, you know, they give the appearance of being very logical and very rational and sort of almost worshiping mathematics, like some sort of weird Pythagorean cult or something. And yet at the same time, if I were to say, you know, I brought the number 7 with me, would you like to talk to him? Would you like to talk to the number 7? People would think you're insane. They think you have a mental problem. You can't talk to the number 7. And yet, when we think about what a computer is or what AI is, it's really nothing more than a bunch of nerd code. There's no consciousness there. And yet they'll treat, well, if we just put more nerd code in there, eventually it'll like become, it's like a magical thinking, right? If you like more algorithms somehow equate to consciousness. And I was, I recently did a lecture on Lewis Carroll's Through the Looking Glass, which is a sequel to Alice in Wonderland. And we went really deep into the philosophy of that book. He was a mathematician, and in certain ways, I think some of his thought sort of presages where we are now, because he was a pretty strict determinist, and he put his mathematical determinism into the Alice stories. And when you get into the later chapters of the copy that I have, there's a reprinting of what the tortoise said to Achilles. And this is a famous logic problem in the history of logic, but it overlaps with mathematics as well, because it sort of makes the point that, following upon Zeno's paradox, that you kind of can't encapsulate some things in sets or in math or in logic. And it overlaps with Gödel's incompleteness theorems, where the sets appeal outside of themselves. And the reason I bring all that up, there's a famous paper that was written some decades back. I think it's at Oxford. It's called Mind Machines and Gödel. And it's making the point that some of these mathematical principles and philosophical logical principles that we're talking about, that you see in some of Lewis Carroll's writings, it kind of demonstrates the impossibility of numbers or sets ever becoming self-aware or self-conscious. It's not possible. It makes no sense. Yet so much of what we're talking about with AI and transhumanism is premised on the idea that it can just become conscious. So how do you see an overlap maybe with evolutionary philosophy and transhumanism, the idea that we're evolving, maybe even humans and robots, or robots are going to become conscious and then we're going to meld with them like HAL in 2001 or something?
Right. I think most people in regards to that question are going to be familiar with like Werner Vinge and Ray Kurzweil's theory of the singularity, which is built on this idea that there's going to be this exponential growth of technology based on Moore's law, and that we're going to reach this sort of apex. And it really is a sort of eschatological vision of transhumanism. And this is one of the reasons why I think it really gels well with many of these medieval Renaissance Enlightenment ideas of utopia, because transhumanism does fit into that quite well. And when we, you know, and I think it needs to be said that transhumanism, that term and the way we understand it, was actually first said by Julian Huxley. And he wrote a book in 1957 called New Bottles for New Wine, describing what he articulated as the religion without revelation. And that's what transhumanism essentially is that we no longer need to deal with revelation, because revelation is occurring through our rational apprehension of the world. But you mentioned earlier, again, this sort of dissolution of boundaries and this emphasis on unity is very much a Neoplatonic presupposition. And it's characterized throughout transhumanism, because they are focused on this unifying principle. So Ray Kurzweil, for example, in his books, I believe it's The Age of Spiritual Machines, literally believes, and he promotes this idea, that we will all be interconnected and there will be essentially a global hive mind of humanity. And again, that's another dissolution of boundaries. And this is why transhumanism is so much in favor of androgyny. And they use the rhetoric, they're very, very supportive of the LGBTQ enterprise because of what they deem as bodily autonomy. And so if you can transition and you can change genders, this one shows a sort of nominal reality that these universal characteristics don't really exist and we can augment ourselves. But it also highlights this push towards doing away with traditional masculinity, as we said, is very much principally oriented around boundaries and the maintaining of boundaries, whether it be men that went to war to defend national boundaries or religious principles or the tribe itself or their wives and children. These were all boundaries to some extent in which men defend, and that's also done through ideology, that's done through religion and culture. And what we're seeing right now through multiculturalism and globalism, all these things are sort of dissolutions of boundaries to some degree or another. And post-evolutionary theory is essential to transhumanism. So I have a handful of like philosophical presuppositions that really characterize transhumanism. The first one I would say is post-secularism. And so actually the Frankfurt School, Jürgen Habermas, who I'm not a big fan of the Frankfurt School, but Jürgen Habermas had really a great criticism of what he saw as genetic engineering and the development of CRISPR technologies and stuff like this. And he highlighted how this was part of the decadence of liberal democracies in the West. But he described transhumanism in this enterprise as a post-secular phenomenon. So what post-secularism means is that secularism, as most people probably understand, is this distinction between the religious ultimate meaning and then the sort of secular enterprise and the sort of public sphere and stuff. Well, because of whether it be postmodernism, posthumanism, or post-secularism, all these things are a collapsing of boundaries again. Yeah. And so post-secularism is the collapsing of the boundary between the religious and the secular. And Habermas highlighted that what transhumanism is because of the postmodern turn, it really is a form of post-secular meaning-making, which ultimately is a religious narrative. And he argued that it really is a secular faith. And multiple other academics have made this argument regarding transhumanism as a post-secular faith. Now, post-humanism is also essential, and there's kind of a couple competing schools within post-humanism. There's more of the ecological bent that's very radical in doing away with an anthropocentric view of the 21st century. And so the idea is to reorient our perception away from what benefits mankind, generally speaking, towards like the earth or nature or the cosmos or something like this. And so they are wanting to end the sort of enlightenment project of man being the sort of measure of all things. And transhumanism, though post-human, because they want to sort of transcend the limits of biology, they do compete with these people, because many of these transhumanisms like Max Moore and Natasha Vita Moore and Nick Bostrom, they're very outspoken of how much they disdain postmodernism, because they view themselves as these sort of technological scientists, philosophers that are highly rational, that are actually doing real things in the world with their research compared to these postmoderns. So transhumanism believes that it is the sort of epitome of the Enlightenment project. They are the endpoint of the Enlightenment. And so they're very clear, Max Moore and Nick Bostrom, that they are sort of the fulfillment of man as the measure of all things. And that transhumanism then is the ability to transcend biological constraints. And that leads into then, if you transcend biological constraints, that leads into one of the other pillars, which is post-evolution, that they believe that the of course, they're very Darwinian Wallace theory, evolutionarily oriented in their mindset, but they believe that by transcending biology, they're going to transcend the selective pressures of evolution itself, which is for them a sort of spiritual transcendence. It's a release from the suffering and the constraints of the world. And that all then, how is that accomplished? That comes to this fourth pillar of dataism. It's about the processing and ciphering and understanding of information, which really is, I would argue, a sort of a Gnostic core to transhumanism, although they would certainly not explain it that way. But I would argue that's exactly what it is.
Yeah, I was thinking too, a lot of the essays that I wrote some years back, and I remember writing about the overlaps between, even though there was some disagreement between Gnostics and Plotinus, the basic idea here is that we're escaping this world, escaping this reality to go back to the source, the one, the monad, the unity, or whatever. So what a lot of the transhumanist ideas have done in regard to things like the metaverse and where they want to take us with this idea of the matrix is to really put that into the here and the now in a technological sense. So even though they may not believe in an afterlife or a higher transcendent reality, the idea is we can put man into his own sort of virtual God world of his own. It makes me think of that movie, The Cell, with Jennifer Lopez, where she goes into this the mind of the serial killer, and in that world, he's sort of his own God, and he wants to be worshipped in that virtual world. I think that's the ultimate offer here for the breaking down of all boundaries is, well, what if you could be the God of your own virtual mental world? Wouldn't you want to live in that world and not in this world? So they're really sort of offering this divided fake simulacrum as a pseudo heaven, you could say, almost. Would you agree with that? Right. That's really where they're pushing a lot of the brain chips and virtual reality where they want to take things.
And you brought up Baphomet too, which again, the most tracings of the historicity of sort of veneration of Baphomet kind of goes back to the Knights Templars, which when we look at Giacomo Fiore, you know, his mentor was Bernard of Clairvaux, who is by many considered the sort of spiritual father of the Templars. And the Templars, I've done research looking into esoteric spirituality and the sort of mystery schools, and they participated in very interesting homoerotic initiation ceremonies for the Templars. And they were a reviving of Gnosticism, generally speaking. So when you look at this ultimate transcendence and gaining and attaining many of these divine qualities like omnipotence, omnipresence. Omnipresence is one that Ray Kurzweil is very interested in regards to the sort of digital interconnecting of all mankind, that essentially then we become one man or one entity around the world. And there, because of that, then we have attained the sort of divine ability of omnipresence. And then obviously through the AI and that becoming essentially your brain, you're going to have omnipotence. And this is for them always the sort of smashing together of opposites. This is the way in which they view this sort of Neoplatonic presupposition of unity over multiplicity, that they worship unity. And I think from a spiritual perspective, it becomes that they worship themselves, as you highlighted. So you're only one person. And there's a, I think it's subtle, but it's an important point to make, that because they worship themselves, they tend to worship pure unity or pure monad.
Yeah.
And I think this could be characterized in regards to the New Age religion, various forms of Gnosticism, Neoplatonism, but transhumanism, I would say, is characterized by the same thing.
Yeah, the speaking of the Huxleys, I mean, Aldous Huxley's book, Perennial Philosophy, says that we need to concoct or sort of create the religion of the future of the world technocratic order. And he says that what it needs to be is some kind of ultimate big blob where everybody just worships collectivity in some generic monadic sense. And the purpose is more of a geopolitical strategic agenda of control than it is some sort of, you know, oh, we really want to see people be enlightened. I mean, no. If you go listen to the clip of Terrence McKenna on YouTube, I think when I found this clip, it really showed me everything about Terrence McKenna. It's look up the clip where it's the discussion of what the mushroom said to me. And it's not what you think, because he says, well, when I spoke to the mushroom told me that we don't need less brown people in third world countries. It's the white soccer moms that need to stop having babies because it's killing the planet. So he literally says that we need to stop having white kids because that's what's killing the planet. So there's a geopolitical strategic agenda behind this. Same thing if you listen to, I remember years ago listening to Manly P. Hall's lectures on esoterica and astrology. And the last lecture of that whole series was him saying, oh, by the way, the purpose of all this is that we need a socialist world government led by the United Nations. So we're not getting esoteric mysteries. We're getting a geopolitical agenda of a one world government and technocratic agenda. I think the same thing is going along with the transhumanists who want to promote things like collectivism, new age, all this, so that everybody can be merged into the hive mind.
Right. Absolutely. And, you know, we kind of mentioned some of these early players in regards to setting the foundation for transhumanist thought. And I'd like to just mention one further connection that I think is really interesting in regards to how they understood mechanical technology as the extension of divinity. And so we highlighted in the 800s, John Scotus Erigena. Then we talked about Giacomo Fiore, and his dates are 1135 to 1202. Then we get Roger Bacon into the 13th century. Then Henry Cornelius Agrippa. This is after the Italian Renaissance. This is after the translation of the Hermetic Corpus, which was deemed by Cosimo de' Medici more important than Plato at that time, even though Latin in the West didn't have a full reading of Plato. And he has a quote that it was precisely this power over nature which Adam had lost by original sin, but which the purified soul, the magician, could now regain. And he highlighted this in the 16th century, and this was sort of echoed by Paracelsus. Both of those individuals were followers of Giacomo Fiore. They're called Giacomite prophecies or Giacomites, who followed this idea that technology was going to gain the capabilities of God, and this was the point of mankind. Francis Bacon then also echoes this, but the book that Francis Bacon has called The New Atlantis, one of the things that's really interesting, it's subtle, but it has a lot of symbolism related to the Rosicrucians, who also had the same idea in their esoteric spirituality that they were going to blend Protestant Christianity, hermetic, magical, esoteric, Kabbalistic ideas with science and technology itself to create utopia, because the millennium was at hand, because they also believed in the prophecies of Giacomo Fiore. And so you see books like Thomas More. He has a book called Utopia. Tommaso Campanella has one called The City of God, which literally enshrined the worship of science and technology for the social and moral perfection of man. And then you look into the 17th century with Johann Andrehi, who was a alchemist, esoteric thinker. He claims that he wrote The Chemical Wedding of Christian Rosenkreuz, the foundation
of Lutherans.
Yeah, and he wrote a book that was, again, utopianistic called Christianopolis, which literally, and this is what I think is so interesting, he argues that mechanical technology was the way that man's soul would unfold itself. So man's soul and his image of God, his divinity, would unfold itself through technology, therefore making technology the sort of ladder that we're going to climb out of the detritus that we're in. And so we see then, and you've mentioned this before about the Royal Society, but the Rosicrucians had the concept of the invisible college. And this actually was the precursor, and many argue, many scholars have argued, the foundation for the actual Royal Society itself, that the Rosicrucian manifestos and many of these manuscripts were saying that there was this invisible college that was already underway, that these men were working to manifest this thing. And then it connected to the Royal Society, I think, is really interesting.
It is, yeah. Hegel plays a key role in that too, because Hegel's hermetic philosophy talks about everything sort of gradually converging into pure spirit, which is the idea of transcending physicality and bodily limitations. My books, you can get those at Jay's Analysis, signed copies. If you find today's topics interesting, there's my philosophy book deals with that. And then follow David Patrick Harry over on Twitter and on YouTube, Church of the Eternal Logos. Thank you for joining me today.